mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Bum, 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 bum. Alex Jones is taking the day off, folks. I'm back. I haven't been back since really the end of the summer. I'm Jason Burmis. I'm going to be sitting in all 4 hours today, but it's jam-packed. We're going to be playing a lot of the Willie Nelson, Alex Jones, Jesse Ventura conversations that we threw up on Infowars.com in the wee hours of the morning last night, I guess. I don't know. 3 a.m. is kind of a vague area. I guess they started going up at around 11 to 1, but last one got up there at 3, but we're even going to have some more for you. We're also going to have Willie on the bus exclusively in the second or third hour. We also have Webster Tarpley on to talk about the elections and, of course, other things. And Ray McGovern will be on later as well, the 26-year CIA veteran, the intelligence analyst that would literally do the briefings for Dick Cheney and company during the Reagan administration. So, big show today. Right off the bat, there's a couple things I want to talk about. We're going to do a news blitz later. We're going to talk about We Are Change, talking to Sarah Palin about 9/11 and a new investigation. I got to tell you, she gave a pretty generic milk toast positive answer very quickly. And I think that's because, A, she wasn't on camera, and, you know, she's on a campaign trail. She's not there to ruffle any feathers right now. She's sitting there and shaking hands with the audience. And I'm sitting here staring at the Newsweek with her, with a rifle over her arm. I mean, let me just, it's in the beginning segment. I don't want to go off on Sarah Palin too much, but what a joke. I haven't really been able to vent, I guess, about the election too much. What a joke that this woman was even chosen as a vice presidential candidate, literally a heartbeat away from somebody who's not in the best health. I'm sorry, but if you haven't seen McCain on the campaign trail the last 18 months, 2 years, he looks like death itself. I mean, the man is a walking corpse. I don't think he can survive 4 years in office, quite frankly. You know, not that it really matters. Both of them are really severe puppets of the establishment. And Sarah Palin, I mean, she's got 3 kids. You know how much time that takes alone? And she's the governor. Yeah, I guess she's a little career-driven. But, you know, she's corrupt just like the rest of them. She's a human being, and she'll just go along to get along. I mean, she's already in this quote-unquote conservative party that's anything but conservative. And she says she's in favor of a new investigation, but she says it's to keep in the minds of people. We'll play that clip later. Of course, we're going to talk about the quote-unquote failed assassination attempt on Barack Obama. That's pretty breaking. I'm pretty curious to see. You know, these guys apparently are white supremacists. We're going to play a mainstream clip from CBS that we're going to try to shoot him with a scope rifle at 750 yards. I'm not sure, but I saw some people in the media reporting something about a decapitation. I didn't see anything about that in this one. I'm wondering, you know, obviously there's racists in the world, folks. I'm not advocating that. Obviously there are people that would have a vested interest in just killing this man out of hate, not because of what he stands for or anything like that, but just because of the color of his skin, and that's unfortunate. But I want to see if these guys are in an organization, what kind of ties they have, because you know that these guys get caught all the time being coddled and prodded by feds. It's the way it is. They infiltrate very quickly, and they put these ideas in their heads, and then lo and behold, it comes out, it was a fed op, and this and that, and to strike fear into people or actually to carry it out. So let's see where that goes. I want to get Tarpley's opinion on that. Obviously, he's weighed in heavily in the election in the last year. And then we're going to talk about Lou Dobbs doing like a 9-minute report, basically saying what we've been saying for years, what Alex has been saying for well over a decade now, that martial law is a very big concern here in the United States. This is the Alex Jones Show, PrisonPlanet.tv, PrisonPlanet.com, and we're going to come back with a little Willie Nelson, Jesse Ventura, and Alex Jones.
From
is Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines. The information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
All right, folks, we are back. And I'm just going to jump right in to a little bit of a conversation with Willie, Alex Jones, and Jesse Ventura. Jesse really recounts when he went down to be governor, and all of a sudden he was asked to go downstairs, and a bunch of people told him that they were from the CIA, and they wanted to talk to him. And he said, well, you know what, let's let Jesse tell the story, because obviously he can tell it a lot better than I can.
Being like a typical former service guy, felt it, I guess it's my obligation to go down and, you know, talk to these guys. So I went down, but being who I am, I got down there and, you know, in the bowels of the Capitol, right in the Capitol, and it was in the basement. I'll never forget it, Dave. They were seated all in a big half circle, and I had the chair in the center. And that's where I was put, with this half circle group of 23 members of the CIA. And I think the first thing that really made me, got my awareness up, was as I looked at them all, they were all your neighbors. I mean, you weren't looking at James Bond here. You know, you went down there with the feeling you were going to walk in and see all these former Navy SEALs and former Delta Force guys who are now out and they're now working in the intelligence community and all this. Uh-uh. It was Grandma Jones down the street. It was so-and-so. I mean, they were of all ages.
You knew them?
No.
Oh, yes,
I knew none of them. These were like the 20. Yeah, they looked. That's the part I didn't do, Willie, is the fact that when I looked at them, I saw my neighbors. Not actually. What I meant by that, Willie, was I saw my people just like my people you'd never suspect. As these are people in the Central Intelligence Agency. They were of all ages, all colors, all looked like almost different categories of wealth.
What kind of training do you think they had?
I don't know. This was part of it, though. This was part. No, I'm sure they get trained. And actually, I found out this was actually many of them's part of their training. This was a training exercise that was likewise going on, as well as fact-getting. And so I sat down and I looked at them all, because I wrote about it in my last book, and so I don't mind talking at all about it. I remember I looked at them all, and the first thing I said, before you ask me any questions, I got a few for you that I'd like answered. I said, quid pro quo. You know, if you ask me questions, I get to ask you questions. And I said, my first question is, what are you doing here? And the head guy, they were very formal. They were always governor, sir, very much that way, very respectful. But I remember the head guy looked at me and he said, what do you mean, governor? And I said, well, what I mean is that your mission statement says you're not to be operational inside the United States. What are you here for? This is clearly inside the United States. Well, I got hemmed and hawed and didn't really get an answer, you know, double talked and all that. Then I said my second question. I said, I want to go around the room, and I said, I want you to tell me your name and what you do. Half of them wouldn't tell me their names. Half of them wouldn't tell me what they did. Who knows if they're really telling you their correct name? No way of knowing. And so I said, well, look, if you're not going to cooperate fully with my questioning, I said, I'm probably going to find it difficult to fully cooperate with yours. It's got to be equal here. So I ended up, and the amazing thing, like I said to Alex, or made mention to him, was that all of their questions dealt about how I won the election. They wanted to know what we did, how we did it, did we think, da-da-da-da. And so when I got done that day, I drove home, and all the way home, I kept thinking, it was on my mind, and I kept thinking, who would I call? Who do I know that could answer these questions for me or help me? And then the name popped up, Dick Marcinko. Do you know who Dick Marcinko is? Well, Richard Marcinko is the author of the Rogue Warrior books. He's a 32-year member of SEAL Team. And Dick created SEAL Team 6, which is the anti-terrorist unit. These are the guys that have hair like you, Willie, and beards, and you'd never suspect they're in the United States Navy. They're deep undercover, you know. And Dick created them. He created Red Cell. And Dick had retired after 32 years. He's a good friend of mine. So I got home and I rang Dick up and I told him what happened that day. And I says, Dick, I said, you got any idea why the CIA, 23 members, would want to interview me? And Dick starts laughing on the other end. And I said, what's so funny? He said, well, he said, I don't, he said, I've been out of it a few years. So he said, I can't directly tell you why. He said, I don't know directly why, but he said, I have an idea. And I said, well, Dick, your idea is going to be better than mine. I said, I had 6 years in the Navy. You had 32. I said, you got a lot more expertise. I said, what's your idea? He said, well, he said, here's what I believe. He said, they didn't see you coming. He said, and then it made sense. He said, their job is to gather intelligence so that they can report that to the government, and the government can then make decisions based on the gathering of that intelligence. He said, clearly they didn't see you coming.
They wanted to know how you did it.
And they wanted to know how you did it. And Dick goes, they also wanted to know, are there more of you on the horizon? Is this a trend we're missing? Are we missing something here that could be happening within the United States, like the next election? Are we going to see four more independent governors win? Or is Minnesota kind of an isolated incidence here? And when Dick got through saying that to me, I thought, he's right on. That's exactly what it was.
Well, there you go. Even more evidence that this shadow government, this continuity of government, special interests, corporations have really taken over. And, I want to play this Dobbs clip. I don't want to just play clips here, but it's really important for people to understand how all this stuff has been integrated. And I'm going to go over this with Tarpley. And really on a mass level on 9/11 as well. I mean, this is really where they tested out whether or not they could get out with a massive military operation inside the United States, a false flag op here, using military drills, using continuity of government as a cover. And that's what's brought us here today, 7+ years later, with Lou Dobbs finally coming around and saying, I mean, this is a big report right here. This is on CNN, all right? He's literally talking about finally posse comitatus. I want to let people know we're streaming over at prisonplanet.tv, so when we play clips like this, you're probably going to be able to see the video. We got a little bit of a setup fix here. There's no more humming on the laptop, so we can stream everything right from here. It's a little easier on John Harmon up at GCN headquarters in Minnesota. And I also want to get Tarpley's take on, you know, how far continuity of government has really come now with this bailout. Because we're talking about a massive... now, economic takeover. I mean, they've done it before. Like I said, Ventura mentioned to us this all happened, in the 80s when they took over the farming industry. And I believe that was also discussed on the bus. We may have that in the second or third hour. We're going to have a little bit of Willie Nelson on the bus. 1:30. That's when that's coming on. So that should be pretty exciting for everybody. And PrisonPlanet.tv members, of course, are going to get that in the highest quality possible when the video is up. Now, I'm gonna start playing some of this Dobbs, because I think it needs to be played. We'll get into the Barack Obama assassination later, but here we go. Here's the Dobbs martial law clip. This is Moneyline with Lou Dobbs. Lisa Sylvester is the reporter.
Questions tonight about an Army combat brigade being trained to deal with civil disturbances in the United States. The Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 generally prohibits federal uniformed services from carrying out domestic law enforcement duties, except in cases expressly authorized by the Constitution or an act of Congress. Critics say the brigade's training goes against one of the founding principles of our country, separation of military and civilian government. Luis Schiavone has our report.
They've spent 30 months on the streets of Baghdad. Now the 1st Brigade Combat Team of the Army's 3rd Infantry Division is back in the USA. The Army Times reporting, quote, they may be called upon to help with civil unrest and crowd control or to deal with potentially horrific scenarios, end quote. The question arises, why? And isn't that what the National Guard does?
Infantry brigade is designed to engage an enemy with maximum effective force and destroy it. That's not the sort of thing anybody wants to see in the streets of the United States.
Almost 5,000 strong, the brigade is based at Fort Stewart, Georgia, under, quote, the primary purpose of this force is to provide help to people in need in the aftermath of a WMD-like event in the homeland, so that were they called to support civil authority, those governors or local state jurisdictions that might need our help, that they would be responsive and capable in the aftermath of an event like this, end quote. On Capitol Hill, questions about how the Pentagon determined that a thinly stretched military with two conflicts underway could spare these troops.
That's a misuse of assets. Those assets can be deployed, I think, more efficiently somewhere else when you have the guard that you can call up on a moment's notice.
Historically, the posting is unusual. In modern history, Army troops have been used at extraordinary junctures. Under the first President Bush to contain the 1992 riots in Los Angeles, under President Lyndon Johnson in response to Detroit's 1967 riots, and in the grips of a depression by President Herbert Hoover to contain Army veterans demanding their bonuses. All actions, says historian Robert Dalek, undertaken by
unpopular presidents on edge about their capacity to lead, to evoke public support for whatever it is they think needs to be done.
Lisa, the Army Times journalist tells us that the story has generated intense public interest, and 4 weeks into a...
Intense public interest? Are you kidding me? Did you just hear that, folks? When was it there? During the Depression, during the riots, and under Bush 1 in 90s under those riots. That's great. Only now it's more of a permanent thing. They're building bases here. It's the real deal, martial law, already in the United States. Imagine when they're on the streets, everyday life. PrisonPlanet.com, Infowars.com. Remember, Willie Nelson on the bus. Folks, we are back. I'm Jason Burmis, subbing in for Alex Jones today. We're going to have Tarpley on in about 30 minutes. And at 1:30, we're going to play Willie Nelson on the bus, discussing a host of issues, you know, from the rape of the farmers in the 80s and where it's really gotten to today. And, you know, the problems in the country today, 9/11 truth, the whole shebang. And speaking of 9/11 truth, I guess I should play this this Palin clip or a little portion of it, and hopefully people will be able to hear it. It's in a very crowded, you know, she's campaigning. I mean, come on, let's be real here. So hopefully you guys will be able to hear it. Here we go. And there's a story over at PrisonPlanet.com and Infowars.com by Paul Joseph Watson. But, you know, again, she's on the campaign trail. She doesn't know she's being taped. You know, I doubt she has any idea what any of these host of issues there are on 9/11. So, you know, again, how is this woman qualified to run the country when John McCain dies? I mean, let's be honest, he's an older gentleman. He's not the pillar of health. We're not electing Jack LaLanne. Well, we're not electing anybody. They're really selecting whoever they want with their diebold machines and their corruption, which makes me sick. Oh, so with this first hour news blitz, I guess I should get into these. I guess they're calling them skinheads, but I saw a couple of the mugshots, and they both had hair. Apparently, one of them has a neo-Nazi tattoo. I'm not saying they're not neo-Nazis. There's plenty of racists out there, folks. There's plenty of ignorant people. So let's see what CBS has to say. And like I said, I want to see if these guys perhaps were provocateur, if they are part of some, you know, ridiculous Ku Klux Klan or neo-Nazi organization that has been infiltrated by the FBI, because the FBI loves that stuff. It's called order out of chaos, divide and conquer. They like to stir up, you know, conflicts with race, conflicts with religion. It keeps the masses ninnying about little things, and at the same time, it becomes very real because people buy into it, and then it creates this conflict where they're able to put in their own rules and regulations, put them in their privatized prisons, and, you know, the private corporations will use them to be a telemarketer for 39 cents an hour and ask you if you want to change phones or, you know, perhaps get this new insurance plan. Isn't that lovely? I love how America works, don't you? Well, I'd like to change all that.
But we begin with an alleged plot to assassinate Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama.
Tonight, four people are under arrest. CBS 4 investigator Brian Moss has learned exclusive details just within the past few hours. Brian, one man told the FBI there was actually a plan to shoot Obama Thursday night at Invesco.
That's indeed part of what we found out, Jim. Unsettling information. And clearly, federal authorities are taking this very seriously. Tonight, we've learned details about this apparent plot that has law enforcement now trying to connect the dots.
Early Sunday morning, police in Aurora pulled over 28-year-old Theron Gartrell on a routine traffic stop.
The driver of a vehicle was driving erratically. The maneuver appeared to be going from one lane erratically into another lane.
It turned out to be anything but routine. In his rented pickup truck, police found two high-powered scoped rifles, a bulletproof vest, two wigs, a spotting scope, two walkie-talkies, a wireless phone, three IDs in other people's names, part of a pistol, camouflage clothing, and 4.4 grams of methamphetamine. One of the rifles is listed as stolen out of Kansas, according to the ATF.
Well, members of the agency are clearly on a heightened alert based upon the security that's involved with a convention the size of the one that's occurring in Denver. And so behavior like this can be characterized as highly suspicious.
According to an FBI bulletin shared with CBS 4, Gartrell told authorities the weapons belonged to a friend, Nathan Johnson. Police arrested Johnson and his girlfriend at a Denver hotel on drug charges. At the same time, the Secret Service hit this hotel in nearby Glendale early Sunday morning to talk to Sean Robert Adolph, an associate of Gartrell's and Johnson's. But Adolph jumped out a sixth-floor window to escape police. He suffered only a broken ankle. When he was arrested, the FBI says he had a...
All right, folks, we'll be back with the rest of the Barack Obama assassination attempt. Tarpley coming up and Willie Nelson on the bus. Infowars.com. All right, folks, we are back. This is the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burmess, and proving once again I am anything but perfect and a human being. I just played a clip from the assassination attempt over at the DNC, but this is a whole new plot, and it's over at the Drudge Report. There's a couple articles about it. Let me read it off here. Skinheads in Obama assassination plot, and it's wacky because they show like a picture of, apparently they're going to wear top hats, so they show a picture of Dumb and Dumber where they're in the stupid little tuxedos, one of my favorite little movies. I don't know why they'd associate that. I guess it's a big joke. Two white supremacists who plotted a killing spree targeting African-Americans that was to culminate with the murder of Senator Barack Obama have been arrested on a variety of federal charges. According to the court affidavit sworn by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives agent Daniel Cowart, 20, and Paul Schlesman, 18, began discussing the murder plot after meeting online about a month ago. Okay, so these guys met in some kind of racist forum, perhaps? In the ATF affidavit, a copy of which you'll find below, Cowart and Schlesman discussed the killing spree to include targeting a predominantly African-American school, going state to state, while robbing individuals and continuing to kill people. All right, yeah, that's realistic. Come on. As soon as you start a killing spree in one town, you're probably going to get killed. The pair's final act of violence would be an attempt to kill Obama, the Democratic presidential nominee. In separate interviews with investigators, the men said they planned to spread their vehicle towards Obama while shooting at him from the windows, apparently befitting the historic assault. Coward and Sussman stated they would dress in all-white tuxedos and wear top hats during the assassination attempt. Jeez. Coward and Sesselman were arrested last Wednesday night by Tennessee sheriff deputies soon after the pair used chalk to write numerous racially motivated words and symbols, including a swastika, on the exterior of Cowart's automobile. Cowart left and Sesselman are pictured in these mugshots snapped by the Crockett County Sheriff's Department. As a result of this bizarre plot, the wannabe assassins were named in a 3-count federal felony complaint, a copy of which you'll find here. And then the affidavit's pretty quick. Brian A. Weeks, employed by the special agents. Upon conducting separate interviews, white power and skinhead views, killing 88 people and beheading 14 African Americans. That's right, they were going to behead people as well. This is just off the charts weird, huh? I mean, when you see a picture of these guys, it doesn't look like they could be capable of any of this. I mean... Who knows? Maybe these are just meted up kids. You know, something like a mind control thing. I don't know. I don't want to venture off, but it's very bizarre. They're very young. These guys are just... I can see that there is a swastika tattoo on the one guy holding a scoped rifle. But think about that. They're going to kill 88 people, behead 14, and then kill the president in tuxedos and top hats. I mean, did these guys have the tuxedos? Obviously, they had the weaponry, and they're delusional, and they met on the internet, and they're a threat. But, where is it? I want to get Tarpley's take on it. We'll go over it in about 25 minutes when we have him on. I've been on for about 35 minutes. I really haven't promoted anything that we do here over at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. And I am a filmmaker. I just put out a film called Fabled Enemies, about 2 months ago now, and you can get it over at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. Watch it in high quality at PrisonPlanet.tv. But, you know, being with Jesse Ventura and Alex Jones and, of course, Willie Nelson all day 2 days ago, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, what was going on and how it was handled. And Alex, you know, really had to talk to Jesse about what the New World Order was. And he, Jesse being Jesse, did the old Philadelphia, explain it to me like I'm a 6-year-old, Alex. So Alex, of course, brings up Quigley. Now, for those of you out there that don't know Quigley, and why this is important in this whole system, I mean, we're days away from an election. Of course, we're going to talk about that later with Tarpley as well. But it doesn't matter. They've put in 4 establishment candidates. And why do I say 4? 2 people are running for president, Jason. Well, the other guys are really there. I mean, again, McCain's a walking corpse. And if somebody who is not quite as delusional and fairy tale land and much more psychopathic and sociopathic and racist truly did want to try something on Obama for nothing but the color of his skin, who knows? You know? I mean, game over. I mean, chances are it would be the globalists if it was allowed to happen, if it wasn't foiled. But you never know. So those 2 candidates, McCain and Obama, I mean, you've really got to look closely at who they chose for vice president. And I went over Sarah Palin in the segment before. And, if you guys want to call in, maybe we'll take callers next segment. We can talk about anything you want, especially the election and what you think about these candidates. But Sarah Palin is going to go any establishment route they want. And Lord knows who the VP there will be. And then there's Joey B, or Joey Biden. And Joey Biden's in my latest film, Fabled Enemies, you know, cracking jokes and laughing about, you know, funding and 9/11. The Student Scholars for 9/11 Truth got him on record saying there would be a lot coming out about 9/11 across the board as this administration left, which I think will be the case. However, he's a Council on Foreign Relations gentleman. For new listeners, the Council on Foreign Relations is like this, I don't know, I guess they call it the upper class, but really not the super upper class. I mean, this is mid-level minions, but they're little think tanks where they begin to set policy with one another and hobnob and this and that. And he's been with them for years. He's well aware of the quote-unquote New World Order. And these are the people that control the race. I mean, they control your thoughts. I hate to say it. I don't want to sound so cynical and off the wall, but yeah, I mean, they project everything you see, hear, consume. I mean, it's crazy. They own the media. I mean, think about it. You turn the television on no matter what mainline station, they're talking about the election somehow, some way. And these four people who are campaigning. So going back to, you know, Alex explaining the New World Order to Jesse, and this will hopefully be posted in the next few days. Remember, there's a lot posted right now over InfoWars. He said, well, you know, for instance, Carol Quigley, who was a Georgetown professor, you know, inner circle of the elite, was given access to a lot of these roundtable members, or basically the ruling, the Anglo ruling class that had consolidated a lot of power around the mid-1800s, early 1900s. Okay? And this book is called Tragedy and Hope, and he talks about how they recruit people and massage them into it through Rhodes scholarships and the, you know, cars and women, the whole nine. I mean, he basically shows you how they recruit people. And he also talks more about their policies and how most of them, you know, he's in favor of, and he may not be in favor of their methods all the time, but overall their goals are goals that he would like to see. Now, he makes the point that Bill Clinton, of course, was a Quigley protege. And for those that don't know, on two separate occasions, Bill Clinton, you know, gave big ups to his mentor, Carol Quigley. So Tragedy and Hope is the book. G. Edward Griffin gives a stunning presentation on the quote-unquote New World Order and how it was formed. And really, you know, he does that one. He does the Creature from Jekyll Island. It's just amazing. And this is open source information. And it's really out there mostly, or was out there mostly, for the elitists. They did like a small print run, and now it's been a cult classic and reprinted because more people are hip and aware of these things. But this consolidation of power takes place, and now we're left with Barack Obama, who, come on, I mean, if you can't see that this man is a globalist, he's talking about a million and a half man youth brigade. A million and a half man youth brigade. Sound like Nazi youth? Sounds like Nazi youth to me. Especially when you give the speech in Berlin. I mean, God. And Sky News, which is, you know, Fox News out in Europe, in London, they call it his New World Order speech. And he talks about global citizenship. And, you know, that's another thing that's just, you know, again, great. I don't know how much we got on camera with that, but wow, that experience with Ventura and Willie Nelson was just off the wall. I mean, you're in Willie's little luck town where they've shot, you know, movies and music videos, and, you know, Willie's just chilling behind the bar and having a good time and riding around in his old Chevy pickup. I mean, he's not blinging. And that's why, you know, I really admire somebody like Willie Nelson, who has the guts to step up and say all these things and jeopardizes everything. His, you know, his family, you know, his stability. I mean, obviously, he's Willie Nelson. But, I mean, you know, you can get attacked, and he was attacked severely, especially by Fox News, O'Reilly, and all that. But, I mean, he's got a beautiful place on land, but he didn't overdo it. He's not blinging like a rap star. You know, I mean, that truck must have been 10, 15 years old. I mean, he's taking in stray horses so they don't die. It's unbelievable. I mean, the little room that, it was like this little, I don't know, like a back door. I guess it would be like a shed. Maybe a 20 by 40 room. It was nice, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't like decked out. He didn't have fine art all over the place. Just a simple man. A great man. A great musician with a great heart. It's amazing. And then, I don't know, I really love that song, Simple Man, by Lynyrd Skynyrd. It was covered by, I think it was like Shine Down or something recently. And I believe in that, you know? I mean, I don't believe everything in the song, but, you know, you got to live simply. You got to try to take care of your own, be good to other people. I don't believe in this social Darwinism that this quote-unquote New World Order does believe in. That's what they believe in, okay? They are social Darwinists. They're predators. And they use our apathy, our ignorance against us in a manner where we think, you know, this is another thing, again, we talked about forever, and it's over at InfoWars.com. You can go check out the Riding with Jesse. But we talked about how we want to pick a winner, and we're fooled into believing that we can't vote our hearts. Well, that's ridiculous. come election day, I'll be casting my vote for Green Party candidate Cynthia McKinney. Is she perfect? Far from it. Is anybody perfect? No. However, I really feel like, you know, she's open. She's a smart woman. She's savvy. She's a bulldog. And, you know, Chuck Baldwin, great. You know, I talked about Bob Barr with Jesse. Is what, you know, we all were just like, well, what about Bob Barr? And I'm like, you know, Bob Barr, to me, although he's pretty good, he's soft on a lot of issues. He's played politics for a long time. I don't know if I really trust him. And he said, well, what about Nader? And I mentioned, well, Nader, again, he's really good on a lot of issues. The thing is, I feel he's a little bit of a socialist, and he's not the best speaker anymore. He's getting on in years. He's like, oh, the speaking shouldn't count. You should vote for the man. And I'm like, yeah, but his presentation, you know, although it's solid and I like it, I feel like McKinney's got more fervor. So that's the great thing. You know, we could have an open debate in this country, but there isn't an open debate. The last three people I just named, you know, Bob Barr, Cynthia McKinney, Ralph Nader, Chuck Baldwin, four people, they're not even in 95% of the public consciousness. Well, you know, 30 to 40% of the public consciousness isn't going to vote anyway. Probably, actually, I think it's more than that. It's probably like 60, 70% isn't going to vote anyway. So they're not even in. So the people that do vote, out of that percentage, maybe 5% know those candidates. And it's because the mainstream media wants to keep you in this two-party dictatorship. And Jesse elaborated that on that in length. So remember that when you're out in the polls. You know, this radio show has a substantial listening audience. And I'm hoping that you're going to go out there and vote your heart. I mean, another great thing about Jesse, Jesse's rocking a shirt when we go down to the backyard. And that great event there, Jimmy Vaughn, Willie Nelson, tons of other acts, you know, streamed it free on PrisonPlanet.com. Just amazing stuff. And it says, Obama, McCain, anybody but. And of course, anybody but is checked, and he really says, you know, remember, he was talking, he was up on Barack Obama when he first came on this show. He thought Barack was the real deal, he was saying the right things, and then he started to backpedal like a politician, and Jesse realized it. And that is what he did. That's what they do, okay? That's what politicians do. They backpedal. They do what the establishment tells them. And it's unfortunate because he's a really good speaker. He's very charismatic. He's got the people up in a fervor. Up in a fervor. And that's why this story will be totally hyped. I mean, these two kids, they think about that, folks. Obviously, you know, what kind of meds are these kids on? They're not kids, they're young men. But I mean, you know, let me repeat it. They were going to go on a killing spree that included killing 88 people and beheading 14 African-Americans. Of course, you know, the beheading, that's going to be really easy to do all that stuff. Based upon my training and experience, the numbers 88 and 14 have special significance with the white power movement. The individuals discussed doing home invasion robberies to fund their killing spree. So they're just going to rob all these people, kill all these people, then buy tuxedos, white tuxedos and top hats, and kill the president. Or the would-be president. Hyped up big. But, you know, again, we'll see where it goes. I think you're going to see a lot of that. There's a lot of delusional people out there. I mean, people get death, you know, the presidents especially, get ludicrous death threats all the time. I mean, this office alone has been visited by the Secret Service because people posting physical threats on message boards towards the president and other public officials. They will show up. And those people need to be dealt with. They're absolutely sick in the head. That's not how you deal with these people. You don't go out and go and murder them, okay? I'm sorry. Or an attempted murder. Or, you know, like that crazy guy at the Grove years ago putting on a Captain America mask and letting off all these rounds and doing crazy stuff. That's not how you deal with people. You have to expose it. You have to change the system. And, you know, we got a shot at changing some systems, you know. Maybe not everybody out there. You know, obviously, I said get out there, vote your heart. But, you know, this isn't a baseball game. You're not trying to vote who's going to win. Or you're not gambling on it, hopefully. I'm sure Vegas is taking odds. It's a sick society we live in. Vegas is taking odds. Oh, man. But there are elections that do really matter. I would love to see Cindy Sheehan take the seat of Nancy Pelosi in the House. How great would that be? Are you listening, California? Are you listening? We need to get Cindy Sheehan into Congress. And yesterday, you know, Jesse popped in already on behalf of Dean Barkley out in the great state of Minnesota, where GCN, John Harmon, and Ted Anderson are all located. The great folks over there. Let's get him elected senator. Well, that's 1 in 100. That might even be bigger. I mean, those two are huge on two different levels. Okay, you only get 2 senators per state. Now, state senator's another thing, but that's not what he's going for. He's going for the real deal, the whole shebango, the Senate. Okay, but on the other level, you know, congressmen in New York and California tend to get a lot more press coverage than any other congressman in the country at all, no matter what. And Cindy Sheehan already has a huge name for herself, huge name in the media. For her to be elected to Congress would be a massive victory for the common sense movement, for the peace movement, and for the truth movement. So things do matter. Your vote can count. I hope you're registered. God. Remember, folks, coming up, we got Tarpley on the flip side of the hour. And about an hour and a half after that, we're going to have Willie Nelson on the bus. It's InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.com.
This show is documented. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Oh, Johnny Cash. Man, I'm so greedy. Imagine getting to meet him. You know, and I just get to meet Willie Nelson. That's not enough for me. I'd like to meet Johnny Cash from beyond the grave. I do listen to a lot of Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson, though. I mean, more than people would think. I'm really not that into country, but they have some really great songs. They just really hit you hard. And this is, you know, before we go to Tarpley in the next hour, this is a big story that just broke over at PrisonPlanet.com, but fluoride added to children milk in schools throughout UK city. So they're raping the economy, they're putting troops on the streets, they're giving us a two-party dictatorship where really the elitists control the game, and now, they're going to add fluoride to children's milk in schools throughout UK city. Not going to, they have. Fluoride is being added to children's milk in 42 schools throughout the city of Sheffield in the UK, despite the chemical's proven link to liver and kidney damage, cancer, and lowering of IQ. A new strategy with the focus of preventing dental problems among children is to be introduced in Sheffield, reports the Yorkshire Post. The move comes in response to figures showing that the state of the children's teeth in the city is slightly higher than the national average. My God. At present, fluoride is added to children's milk in 42 primary schools in the city. This will continue, and the local NHS is also planning to begin talks on the possibility of adding fluoride to water, the report continues. Delicious! Let's put fluoride in everything! Awesome! You know what? I really like steak. Can't we just inject it into that? I'm sure they're going to. Codex Alimentarius, anybody? Anyway, while fluoride has been proven to have a minimal effect on the prevention of tooth decay, the negative effects of the chemical are legion, according to several medical studies, far outweighing any positive aspects. A recent Scientific American study concluded that fluoride can subtly alter endocrine function, especially in the thyroid, the gland that produces hormones regulating growth and metabolism. The report also notes that a series of epidemiological studies in China have associated high fluoride exposures with lower IQ. Literally the dumbing down of the populace. But that's okay, because I can go buy an iPhone for $300 at AT&T, and my problems are solved. Even though I'm a little dumber, I got a cooler little toy where I can sloth over and get my sports scores. You know, I'm on the plane the other day, coming into Austin, and UT, woo, where's the score? Oh, they're up. They need to be up 2 possessions. Luckily, the guy I was sitting next to wasn't... He was actually really interesting. He was a smart guy. He was into satellites. He was just coming from overseas, and we had an awesome conversation, you know, not only about 9/11, government-sponsored terror, but the New World Order and globalization. And we talked about the Bohemian Grove. I mean, we got into some stuff, and that was just great. It shows you you can be a human being. You can reach out to other people. This was a total stranger I'm sitting next to on a flight for 2.5 hours. I gave him a copy of my film. That's why it's important to go to Infowars.com. Go get Fabled Enemies. Go get Loose Change Final Cut. Go get Alex's film, The Road to Tyranny, the one that really woke me up to a lot of this stuff beyond 9/11. Really showed a pattern. Showed me Oklahoma City. Showed me the first World Trade Center bombing. Showed me how the feds had put those together as well. And you got to make copies. You got to hand them out. Spindletown, USA. You know? That's how we make a difference. Sit them down. Make them watch it. Please, talk to these people. Let them know. It's a two-party dictatorship. We need to change local government. Cindy Sheehan, Dean Barkley, let's do it. Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. We'll be back after this break.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I am not Alex Jones. I am Jason Burmis sitting in on this Wednesday. Actually, it's not. Is it Wednesday? Yeah, it's Wednesday already, right? No, is it Tuesday? God, I'm getting my days mixed up. Let's see, Sunday, Monday. It is Tuesday. Jeez, I'm out of it. Tuesday, October 28th, 2008. And it's great. You know, we're going to put fluoride in the kids' milk at schools. And we're going to dumb down, you know, the populace even more. Delicious. That's awesome. Go read the whole article over at Prison Planet InfoWars. It's beyond belief. Tarpley's coming up in about 5 minutes after the break. We're going to have him for at least an hour. We're going to discuss the election. I want to get in depth about these two candidates. He's been very anti-Obama, and I'm anti-Obama as well, but, you know, I'm also anti-McCain, so it's just so hard for me to want any of it. I did pull up a news clip of the assassination attempt on Obama, the right one. Finally, I got it right. Who knew? Second try. And, you know, these are skinhead punk kids. I haven't read the whole affidavit yet. I will get to it, but let's play this clip right now before we come up on this break.
And right now, there's another breaking story coming into our newsroom. Federal agents have disrupted an alleged plot to assassinate presidential candidate Barack Obama, as well as dozens of African Americans. ABC 7 investigative reporter Chuck Gowdy joins us with details. Chuck?
Linda, two alleged skinheads, according to federal authorities, met about a month ago on the Internet. They have been in custody since last Wednesday as authorities investigated what was behind the suspected plot against Senator Obama. Last week, according to the authorities, they were driving around central Tennessee discussing a white power murder plot, their car sporting a swastika in window chalk and other race hate symbols. Federal prosecutors, a short time ago, releasing a copy of the charges in the plot against Obama, that he was to be among 102 black victims targeted by a pair of young men from rural Tennessee. Authorities say the suspects planned to kill 88 victims with gunfire and 14 people by decapitation. Federal agents say there is significance to those numbers in skinhead circles. 88 stands for Heil Hitler. H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. And 14. There are 14 words in the main marching orders of neo-Nazis. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. The men, allegedly led by this man, 20-year-old Danny Coward of Bells, Tennessee, they allegedly planned to go on a national killing spree with Mr. Obama as their final target. They said that would be their last final act, according to a federal official, that they would attempt to kill Senator Obama. They didn't believe they would be able to do it, but that they would get killed trying. We took these photos a little while ago from Coward's MySpace page on the Internet, a site loaded with pictures of guns that he claimed to own. Coward and a man named Paul Schlesselman, 18 years old, were arrested in Tennessee after Crockett County sheriffs received a tip from a neighboring sheriff's department. The plotters admitted to investigators that they were planning to rob a gun shop to steal weapons for their killing spree. Investigators say the men had several weapons at the time they were arrested last week, including a Fozzie 308 rifle and sawed-off shotguns. According to the affidavit on file in Washington, the men planned to go on a nationwide killing spree targeting an African-American school in Tennessee, that they then planned to go to other states, and when they finally met up with Obama, according to federal investigators, they planned to drive their vehicle as fast as they could toward him, all of them dressed in white tuxedos and wearing top hats as they carried it out. We're still looking into this. It's just unfolding within the past hour out of Washington, and we will have much more coming up later on the ABC 7 News.
So there you go. Were these guys recruited because they're nuts on MySpace? Are they on medication? Are they just straight racists? Obviously, they didn't think they could do it. Who knows? We're going to get Webster Tarpley's take after the break. This is Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. It's the Alex Jones Show.
T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
All right, folks, we are back. It is the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burmis sitting in for Alex. I want to remind everybody to go to Infowars.com and pick up a copy of my latest film, Fabled Enemies, deals with really the intelligence ties with the Mossad, the Pakistani ISI, the Conduit of Government program here in the United States, and 9/11. But right now we have Webster Tarpley, who, of course, is the author of Synthetic Terror and, of course, Obama, the Postmodern Coup. Thanks for being on, Webster.
Another book, an even newer one, called Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography. So I've got two on Obama this year.
Excellent. Well, obviously, I mean, let's get right into it. We're 1 week away from the election. You have been very anti-Obama. I mean, I'm not saying you're pro-McCain, obviously you're not, but... Why, for our audience, why don't you give an overview of why you think he is the much more dangerous candidate?
Well, the short answer is because he's a fascist, and that is something unlike any other candidate seen so far. And in order to get into this, you've got to really go back and look at what fascism was, which is not what Naomi Wolf, for that matter, or this guy Britt, or others are going to tell you, or for that matter, Jonah Goldberg. There's a whole cottage industry to try to obscure what fascism was. Fascism is not a top-down dictatorship that becomes more and more stringent and oppressive, and you get a complete police state from the top down. For that, you wouldn't need a new term. That would just be a police state dictatorship or a tyranny or despotism or something like that. Fascism has another component, which is a demagogic, pseudo-revolutionary, hyper-revolutionary mass movement. And that's got to have grassroots cover. It's got to be anti-authoritarian. It's got to be radical. It's got to be leftist. It's got to be anti-establishment. And the only candidate in the field right now who has that is, of course, Obama. He's got this legion of Kool-Aid drinkers and fanatics, people who are devoted to a personality cult of Obama and not to any set of issues. And there's a kind of utopian, apocalyptic aspect to this, that what's going to come out of this is not just policies that might be better or might be worse, but it's a radical renewal of the world, a renewal of the human personality, and so forth. And this is the most dangerous stuff you can get. So I would say right now the biggest danger is a seizure of power by the repo clique, by the Reed, Pelosi, Obama clique. That would essentially be the Mussolini fascist corporate state. And again, corporate in this case means a guild. It doesn't mean a modern corporation in the way that Mussolini used it. And that would be pretty much you've got the fascistization of the economy through the $700 billion bailout for Goldman Sachs. That has set up what amounts to a compulsory state-sponsored cartel to drive down wages, to drive down production, but to shore up this $1.5 quadrillion derivatives bubble that we're stuck with.
Well, let's get into the bailout in a minute, and I want to talk about what you just said about Obama, because I can't help but agree with you that he does have, like, this rock star image where people do follow him. I mean, I've seen more artwork that spooks me out, that reminds me more of like, you know, Maoist propaganda and these you know, portraits of him in like blue and off red. It is spooky to me there. And I do see where you're coming from on the fascist end as well, but are we really going to see that much of a difference than someone like McCain coming in, who really looks like, I mean, no offense, but a walking corpse? I mean, I don't think he's going to make many decisions except for that on behalf of the establishment. I agree that he probably will not be able to coerce the people as easily. This guy Obama is definitely a charismatic guy. He's a good speaker, and he has been able to get away with, again, campaigning on almost nothing, just on his words and his personality. I don't know of any campaign points such as, you know, getting us out of Iraq. I don't see that happening. People believe that, but it's just a de-escalation.
It's quite the contrary, if I may. Obama is the biggest warmonger in the field. Obama is a bigger warmonger than McCain. Obama is personally committed to bombing the hell out of Pakistan. He's very, very strong on that. And he started with that already a year ago this summer in Chicago, demanding the unilateral U.S. bombing of Pakistan and no two ways about it. He repeated that in his Denver convention speech, saying, we've got to go and get bin Laden at the cave where he exists. Now, the world has changed. Nobody, not even these characters, have any serious interest in this bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, 9/11, war on terror. This is not what they're doing now. They're attacking Pakistan because it's a Chinese ally. The world has radically shifted, and Obama, of course, is a key part of the shift. We no longer have a neocon Bush-Cheney regime in Washington. What we've got is a Rice, Gates, Mullen, Paulson regime, which is run by trilaterals, Bilderbergers, people like Goldman Sachs, Soros, David Rockefeller, and so forth. And the target list has changed radically. Pakistan is the target because it's a Chinese ally. Biden is famous for his anti-Sudan tirades. And it's not about bin Laden and al-Qaeda. It's that you need a humanitarian invasion. He says we've got to go in and save the people from genocide. Now,
Let me finish the point. Sure.
The point is that what they're after is to cut off the oil to China. Everybody knows that China gets 6-8% of their oil from Sudan. So the whole strategic map has changed. The people that are caught in the left liberal universe, they still don't understand this. They still think that they're dealing with Bush, Cheney, and the neocons, and that there's going to be an attack on Iran. I don't think there will be. There's an attack on Pakistan that's going on every day. There's an imminent attack on Sudan. And above all, the whole thing has shifted with Georgia being played against Russia by these people. We're now looking at confrontations in Central Europe. So the short answer to your question is, which imperialist do you want to fight? Do you want to fight a demagogic imperialist of the type of Obama, who promises a facelift for the Anglo-American policy, who can turn out 200,000 German lemmings in Berlin, who's got this legion of Kool-Aid cultists? Or do you want a tired old reactionary, a lame duck, a transitional figure, someone who would be facing, like McCain, facing a Congress that would be very hostile to him because they would feel that they had been robbed of their one-party state? I think what you really hope to get out of this thing, and it's a very modest program, is divided government. We want gridlock. We don't want bipartisan unity around new bailouts of the type that Goldman Sachs is demanding. We don't want the Social Security Trust Fund to be looted in this attempt to prop up the derivatives bubble. So Obama is simply more dangerous and more effective. If you want to organize the Third World War, you need Obama. You're not going to get anywhere with McCain, because nobody in Europe is going to deliver money or troops to the U.S. based on McCain's face. McCain can't go to Africa and say, brothers, join with me and kick out these Chinese interlopers. Obama can do these things. He's more effective for imperialism. And I'm basically in the business of trying to make imperialism weaker rather than stronger. That's, I think, a way to approach the election.
Well, I hear you there, Webster, but I just feel in my heart I can't vote anything but my heart. You know, I can't vote for the lesser of two evils.
Forget vote. What is vote? Vote. one wretched, miserable little vote. What you've got to do is attack Obama. Basically, expose Obama for what he is, and the people will do the rest. Right now, again, the worst possible outcome is Obama, Pelosi, and Reid. That is a government that will, among other things, try to shut down this radio program. The whole Genesis Network would be a target for hate crimes and for what they call the fairness doctrine.
Do you think Cindy Sheehan has a shot against Pelosi in their, the seat for...
I wish her well. I hope she does the best she can, and I hope she at least embarrasses Mrs. Pelosi as much as possible. But the question of dictatorship, see, one thing is, you know, the FBI comes and harasses you. That's what we've seen with the Patriot Act. And it's clear that that has limits. You get to a point where the police and the secret police are not enough, and the army cannot be relied on. And that's the classic point where the financiers, the Soros, Rockefeller, Goldman Sachs types, turn to a mass movement of gutter snipes and hooligans and thugs and goons and fervidly idealistic students. And that's pretty much the Obama, this legion that he's got, the sort of left liberals, who they've been so blinded by their hatred of Bush and Cheney that they have imitated them in many ways. And they're now interested in suppressing free speech. They want to shut you down if you criticize their idol. And they bring to this a religious fanaticism that you just don't see on the other side. There's no group in this society that is, you know, 1,000% devoted to McCain. And this simply means that Obama is by far the most dangerous. So if you come out of it with McCain and a Democratic Congress, let them fight each other to a standstill. That's the most you can hope for. I don't know what else you can hope for. And by the way, don't blame me for the situation, because I didn't create it.
Well, absolutely, no one here is blaming you, Webster. Absolutely not. I don't know. I just see it as a lose-lose. I mean, you put Barack Obama in, you're more likely to get a progression of this with the people really standing for it, because again, he's a charismatic guy, he's a good speaker. I haven't seen a speaker, a politician as slick as him since Bill Clinton, who was able to keep
Mussolini.
Well, I wasn't around when Mussolini was around, so, and I don't speak Italian, so I can't really speak to how charismatic he was. But you know, Clinton, I mean, he was smooth. He still is smooth. I mean, he's really good, and I see that in Barack Obama. He's able to smile and get around almost.
But wait, don't you think this is too superficial? I'm talking about a fascist mass movement. Clinton didn't have this in his wildest dreams, and Mrs. Clinton had no such thing.
Well, I would disagree.
Bush doesn't have it.
I would disagree that Bill Clinton didn't have that mass movement. By the time he was elected the second time, the country really did love him, Webster.
Not a fascist mass movement. That's just a politician who is... And what can you say about Clinton? He was better than Bush the Elder. Mm-hmm. He was better than Dole, and he was better than Bush the Younger. So on that basis, he got a lot of people to follow him, and I think he did some things that were very bad. But there's just no comparison. See, what you're doing is mixing apples and oranges. You're saying just another bourgeois regime, just another reactionary, just another, and you're mixing that with a fascist mass movement and a one-party state.
Yeah, but now, he's not even in right now, and right now the economy is being raped on another level with this bailout and the threat to congressmen.
Yeah, fine, let's look at that.
Look at that on the flip side. I do. I want to talk about the bailout. I want to talk about the economy being raped. I want to talk about the pension funds being gone. I want to talk about the Dow just totally and completely dropping. I think it went another 200 points yesterday. We got Webster Tarpley, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, PrisonPlanet.tv.
They railed against the crown.
Another ragtag band. All right, it's the Alex Jones Show. I'm Jason Berman sitting in. We're with Webster Tarpley right now. We're discussing the election. We're discussing the bailout. And before the break, I was trying to make the point that this rape of the economy has already really more than begun. I mean, this bailout is huge, and this is under the Bush regime. And now we're moving probably into, you know, Obama. And to me, it's almost like the same people are heading both of them up. It's just going to be a continuation. You know, and I don't think that it's any less severe. I mean, I still see an agenda in Eurasia. I still see an agenda here at home. But don't we already live in really a pseudo-fascist society right now? I mean, the corporations pretty much have a dominant monopoly on the arms industry, on the housing market, on the media itself, Webster. And now, really, the banking cartel has gone just out of control. So I understand you think it's going to go to another level. So here you go, Webster. Go for it.
You're making the mistake that people in Italy made in 1919, and they said, how could it get worse? We've got people that are forgotten today. We've got Facta, we've got Salandra. How could it be worse? Mm-hmm. And when Mussolini seized power with the March on Rome in 1922, they found it could get infinitely worse. And the same thing was in Germany. It was complicated by the fact that people by that time in the early 30s had been looking at Mussolini for a while, and there were a lot of leftist and labor people in Germany who said, well, Brüning is as bad can be. He's already a fascist. So this Hitler will not make a big difference. And then, when they went off the cliff in January of 1933, they saw that there was a qualitative difference. And this you can see in the memoirs and the memorabilia of the period, that people had this idea that it was already as bad as it could get, but their imagination was nowhere near rich enough to grasp what was coming their way.
But Webster, wouldn't they need another big event, another big false flag op, either here or in Europe or Canada, perhaps, or maybe
sure,
even Mexico?
But look,
yeah,
but
okay.
Of what type? Mm-hmm. Look, the whole scenario for Obama has now been blurted out by Biden in Seattle on the 19th of October. He says basically two things. One is a 12-month perspective where he says our economic decisions to deal with this systemic crisis and breakdown crisis of the banking system, these decisions that we will have to make will be sound decisions, he says, because he's a banker's boy, mm-hmm. but they will be so unpopular that our regime will collapse in the polls within 12 months. So we want you to support us because we're making sound decisions, even though everybody's going to say, wait a minute, what are you doing? I didn't vote for this. I didn't want this. That's the 12-month perspective. I mention this one because this is the one the Republicans generally don't want to talk about because they're going to try to do the same thing. That's correct. Now, the other side of it is the six-month perspective, that there's going to be a generated international crisis, hooked up, and it's going to involve the Middle East, but Russia is the one that I would point you to, because that already represents a qualitative escalation of the insanity and the danger. A country like Iran, basically defenseless in the sense of intercontinental strategic weaponry. They can do a lot in the Gulf. They can do things in Iraq. They can do a great deal. But there's really very little way that they could strike the United States with any military means. But when you're dealing with Russia and China, then everything changes radically. You're talking about intercontinental ballistic missiles, hydrogen bomb warheads, things that are much better, in fact, than a lot of things that the U.S. has. So Biden says we're going to have a test in the first 6 months. And then he points out the righteousness of the U.S. position will not be evident. It won't be clear that we're doing the right thing. And I think it means two things. The false flag question. The old false flag will not be repeated. I don't see just a repetition of the old false flag, because the targets are no longer Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan. That's over with. What is the target now is Russia, Moscow. And it's somehow got to be a false flag that will get you a strike against an enemy of today, Pakistan maybe, Sudan. Again, these are Chinese allies.
All right, but let me stop you there. Don't you think that they would use that same boogeyman, bring out the General Mahmoud Ahmed connection, the ISI connection, the fact that Bin Laden lives there to spook the American public? I mean, you don't think they'll use that card again just to try to take with them the already, somewhat conservative base that still believes in this war on terror?
The whole war on terror is a totally discredited, used up, and useless construct at this point. See, the intelligence community is not Johnny OneNote. They can't be. You can't just go on till kingdom come repeating Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, and all this other stuff. This is discredited. This gets you nowhere. If you looked at the two conventions, these things were hardly mentioned. Biden was one of the ones who mentioned it, probably the only one at the Democratic convention. And at the Republican convention, it was very, very much eclipsed. The new target is Russia. You've got to find ways to strike at Russia. And that gets you into a different kind of false flag.
All right, we'll come back to you right after this. Webster Tarpley, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. I'm Jason Berman, sitting in for Alex Jones.
Riders on the storm, riders on the storm, into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown.
All right. right, we are back to the Alex Jones Show. Coming up in about an hour, we're going to have the exclusive Willie on the Tour Bus interview. So cool to be able to go up to Willie Nelson's house, interview him and Jesse Ventura, you know, having conversations about what's going on in the world today. Right now, we're discussing the election, the bailout with Webster Tarpley. And, Webster, maybe you can explain this to me a little bit better, how this bailout is able to go from one administration to the other and then get just so much worse. I mean, obviously, this is a down payment. This first $750 billion with another $150 billion on top of it that we know about publicly is probably, you know, a multiple trillion-dollar deal. It will go into either administration. But, you know, again, you really think that Obama can get the world behind him into this conflict with Russia. Now, obviously, there was a test run for that, the Georgian conflict. Why do you think that this conflict with Russia has to happen? Do you feel that Russia is unhappy with their place in the world? Do you feel like they don't feel like they're going to have, you know, first world status in this new global order? Explain.
Russia is not the aggressor. Georgia was the aggressor, egged on by Soros, Brzezinski, and others.
Well, I agree there. I mean, absolutely. I mean, what's his name? Not Soros. What's the president's name? I can't.
Saakashvili.
Yeah, Saakashvili went on Glenn Beck, and he basically said that Russia was against the New World Order right on television. So obviously they want their place in NATO, Georgia. They were under U.S. direction with special forces there and Israeli special forces as well, probably Blackwater. They were the aggressors. There's no doubt about that. But, I mean, why do you think Putin can't get along? You know, why do you think they sent Georgia in there?
Well, the issue is, who will have imperialist world domination for the next 100 years? And what we have now is an unprecedented crisis of Anglo-American imperialism. In other words, U.S.-British world domination has never been more threatened than right now because of pure bankruptcy, because of this $1.5 quadrillion derivatives bubble, which is now destroying the banking systems of London and New York. And these are the epicenters of the crisis. The normal response of Europe under these circumstances would be break off from the U.S. and the British and do east-west trade energy deals with Russia and Eurasia and save themselves at the same time that the rest of the world runs like as fast as they can from London and New York. So the Brzezinski calculation is something like this. If you can smash Russia and China, above all, if you can get an end game where you get Russia and China at war with each other in World War III, this is the ultimate goal for somebody like Brzezinski, a geopolitician, then the U.S. and the British can rule the world for another 100 years. But if they don't do this, the U.S.-British Empire is simply doomed. So they're interested in doing this. Now, from that we get the bailout. Now, remember, if you go back to Nazi Germany, a lot of the fascist economic infrastructure was indeed installed before Hitler's seizure of power. This was done by a guy called Schacht, S-C-H-A-C-H-T, Hjalmar Schacht, who was the head of the central bank, and then he became Hitler's finance minister. But the problem is you've also got to have a political structure that goes with it. So here we have already the fascist corporate state, and again, that means the state-sponsored compulsory cartel for the purpose of crushing wages, driving down production, right, destroying industrial capacity, but shoring up the derivatives bubble, purely fictitious, bloated, speculative values. But you've got to have a political administration that goes with it, and that means this fascist mass movement. What we've seen so far is the situation where Bush taps your phone, the National Security Agency taps your phone, violating the FISA law, or some FBI agents come to your house and harass you. Fascism is when a mob of hooligans and goons and students and fanatics come to your home, burn it out, you know, lynch you, rape your wife, and destroy everything that you've ever put together.
So this is really the nightmare scenario that you project in America. If he gets elected, how you...
You can see this coming. Look, it's also the idea of an extra-legal goon squad that operates with the tolerance of the police. I mean, Mussolini's March on Rome in October 1922 militarily was a joke. There was no way they could seize control of Rome. But The Army was told, don't do anything. And the police were told, fine, let them in. This is what we need. The ruling class wants this to be the next government. You've got this case up in Burlington, Vermont. A guy goes up to a book table of middle-aged ladies tabling from Obama, asks a very interesting question. What's the relation of Obama to Brzezinski? The middle-aged, charming ladies call the cops. The guy's thrown to the ground, threatened with a taser, kept in jail for 36 hours. He's now got a court date. In Missouri, you've got prosecutors and sheriffs who are saying, if you lie about Obama, we're going to come after you with criminal charges. Anybody who's got a Federal Communications Commission license knows that they will be in big trouble if we get the Obama-Pelosi-Reid regime. Larry Sinclair goes to the National Press Club in June, gives his charges against Obama, which you can see at his website, and then he's arrested with a hoped-up warrant by Bo Biden, the son of Joe Biden, the current Democratic vice presidential candidate. So you're getting an unmistakable pattern of goon squad activities where it's an illegal or extra legal goon squad. Another one, if Bush taps your phone under FISA, the left liberals, of course, will scream. But you can go and you can hack into Palin's email if you're a young fascist from Tennessee, and you put that up on the Gawker.com, and everybody thinks that's wonderful. The left liberals think that's great. See, the interesting thing about the left liberals is normally they would be concerned about police state measures, but the genius of fascism is it allows the fascist mass movement to present itself under left cover, and that's really the key thing. Obama has that, right? Obama's got some left cover. McCain, of course, has none. So when it comes to strike breaking, when it comes to imposing austerity, Obama's more effective. McCain will say, we got to fight the war on terror, and people will say, get lost, go home. We're sick of this tissue of lies. Obama will say, I'm doing it for the polar bears, for global warming. I'm doing it for the third world solidarity, for people starving in Africa.
Well, I don't think there's a doubt that he's more worldly. He's more influential. He's more well-spoken. He's more
apt to bring in. I don't know why you keep coming back to this. I think the guy is a wreck. In other words, what I see is mental impairment from cocaine and marijuana.
Okay.
He's not eloquent at all. If you take away the glass plates of the teleprompter, the guy's tongue-tied. He can't put two words together. He's actually worse as a speaker than Bush, except if he's got the glass plates of the teleprompter.
You really think so?
Sure.
Oh, I don't know, Webster.
How many speeches have you seen? You know, you can put together some of these the right wingers, right, who are at least doing something. Uh-huh. They put together, he stammers, he stutters, he hems, he haws, he gurgles, he gargles. You know. Whenever he's in deep water, you can hear him searching for the words. I think in terms of being a spontaneous speaker without the glass plates of the teleprompter, he's one of the worst we've seen in recent years. It's a complete media facade of lies and distortions and above all, hero worship. Because, this is the other thing for people to understand. If you want to know who Wall Street's candidate is, turn on any television network for the evening news. You will know within 10 minutes. Wall Street demands Obama. If you don't want Obama, there's something wrong with you.
Well,
you're
I agree there. I mean, obviously, you got more funding.
So what do you do? How do you respond? You want to fight back against Wall Street and defeat their candidate.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they've got the other guy in their pocket. And like I said, McCain doesn't look too good.
But he's a weak entry.
I agree, but what happens
if
McCain...
He's not going to be able to deliver. In other words, he'll try to deliver austerity. It won't work.
Uh-huh.
He'll try to deliver a coalition against Russia. That won't work either.
What if he dies, Webster, in office, and then they just put in Palin, and they put somebody in as the VP that they can, you know, more easily massage? Maybe people
will
go for that.
That's a much better bet than Obama-Biden. At least the only person who's not an investment banker, not a banker's boy, not a millionaire. I'd take a chance.
Yeah.
What else are you going to do?
Well, then I'd also like to ask what you think the shot of Obama being assassinated in office is. I mean, obviously,
I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
this is one of the memes spread by the Obama campaign. And as a matter of fact, this is actually a turning point in the intelligence picture. If you're listening to the news reports today, we've got these two pathetic patsies, two mythomaniacs, two white supremacist skinheads, one from Tennessee, one from Arkansas, and they had a plan. They're going to rob a gun shop, go to a black high school, kill determined numbers of people, cut the heads off some of them, jump back in the car, rob another gun shop, get white tuxedos, and then attack Obama with rifles from afar. This is absolutely ridiculous. This is in the same league with the Fort Dix Six, right? The Six who wanted supposedly to barge into Fort Dix and start shooting, mm-hmm. or the JFK pipeline bombers, mm-hmm. or the Canadian fertilizer bombers.
Oh,
or the British.
Absolutely ridiculous. I mean, there's no way you're going to kill.
Absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, Rob Holmes on the way. I read part of the affidavit and played the clips.
But it's a necessity because this is a meme of the Obama myth. And one of the things, the Kool-Aid cultists and lemming legions of Obama need to be told periodically that there are dark forces conspiring against their man, because otherwise it might begin to dawn on him that he is the candidate of Goldman Sachs. Look, you have this guy Cramer who goes on CNBC in the afternoons. Cramer
sure.
speaks for the trading desk at Goldman Sachs. Now, mm-hmm. Goldman Sachs money is flowing to Obama at about 3-1 to 4-1. Mm-hmm. So for every dollar that McCain gets bundled for him from Goldman Sachs, Obama gets 3-4 and maybe more. The government right now, it's not a Bush-Cheney government anymore. Those are lame ducks, caretakers, groundskeepers. They count for absolutely nothing.
If you look
at this bailout, Paulson runs the government. Mm-hmm. Paulson is the economic dictator of the U.S. Gates is so powerful that he's going to stay on into Obama, and he's a Brzezinski boy from the Carter administration, 77 to 79.
Yeah, well, I got to ask you, for instance, the continuity of government program. It was revamped in the 80s under George Herbert Walker Bush. You know, Cheney's pretty much been in the succession program since that. Obviously, you know, he was part of it on 9/11. Do you think his role in continuity of government or shadow government just ends?
I think it's finished, of course. He's washed up. He counts for absolutely nothing.
Really?
He
after 20-some years?
He can't get anything he wants. Look, I'll give you a concrete case.
Okay.
He didn't want North Korea taken off the terror list.
Mm-hmm.
And he fought a big battle, and Condoleezza Rice walked all over him.
Mm.
You've got Biden going to the Israelis and saying to them, "Dear Israelis, there's going to be a nuclear-armed Iran, and you are going to do nothing about it, and you are going to like it." Mullen goes to the Israelis and says, "Don't you dare do anything vis-a-vis Iran. We have our policy, and you will damn well do what you're told." So this entire world, see, the world of Bush, Cheney, and the neocons is gone, finished, kaput. They're washed up. If you're looking for covert operations, Obama is the covert operation. It is a postmodern coup. It's based on the Orange Revolution in Kiev, the Roses Revolution in Tiflis, Georgia, these other things that were going on during the Bush-Cheney years, the National Endowment for Democracy, the left wing of the CIA, the foundations, the Soros, Brzezinski, Human Rights, International Crisis Group, left cover world. See, if you're so focused on the top-down stuff, do you think the police state is coming from some building in Washington, D.C.? It's wrong. It's coming from a gutter near you with Obama fanatics coming up out of the sewer and coming after you with the connivance of the police.
Well, don't you think that they've also kind of set up an indoctrination? I mean, he's talked about the 1.5 million man youth brigade. I mean, do you think he's going to use more of the bureaucracies, maybe Homeland Security or something like that, to bring these into existence,
yeah, sure,
to indoctrinate the youth? I mean, that'll take some time, don't you think, Webster? At least a couple years.
But this is the Obama regime. He's got five volunteer organizations. He's got a Homeland Security Corps, mm-hmm. a Green Corps. That's great. If they decide that you're a polluter, they'll come and burn you out and lynch you or do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole logic of Obama is stuff like, Mussolini had this youth movement called Balilla, this kind of stuff. Nobody knows these things in the U.S. anymore. That's one of the problems, is that, you know, fascism, the early phase of fascism is now 75 to 90 years behind us. So there's basically nobody left who remembers it. And the people who purport to write about fascism don't tell you. But the idea of having, you know, mass organizations of the government from somebody who comes into power with a movement of fanatics, that's fascism. That's Mussolini. And it's not the conservative, reactionary kind of stuff with Bush. Further example, one of the criticisms that Obama has of Bush is he attacks him from the right. He says, "Bush, after 9/11, you should have decreed crushing austerity. You could have cut the living standard by a third or a half and given that money to Wall Street under the cover of the war on terror. You didn't do that, Bush. That's what we're going to do." And he does it with left cover. Not bin Laden, not al-Qaeda, but But again, the polar bears,
hold on.
Global warming.
I listened to his acceptance speech, actually, when I was driving back to New York. It was on NPR or something. And he mentioned bin Laden. And he mentioned, you're right, he mentioned going into Pakistan and wherever it took him. Absolutely.
This is the only place, though. And again, you've got to understand, why are they doing what they're doing? The Afghan war is now being run for the purpose of destroying Pakistan as a unified state.
Well, and running opium.
Yeah, fine, but this has been going on forever. Tell me something new. The new thing is, instead of having one Pakistan with a government in Islamabad, it's going to be five or six mini-states. This is the Brzezinski policy. Micro-states and mini-states. So Pashtunistan, Balochistan, Waziristan, Sindh, and they have these separatist groups that correspond to each of these. The goal, again, being that it must be destroyed because in a strategic confrontation, Pakistan traditionally goes with China against India. And the Anglo-Americans imagine that they'll be using India against both.
Out of that, don't you feel they still want to build some kind of a Eurasian union that's under their control? I mean, you're saying Iran is probably off the table no matter what.
Iran is on the table, but as a kamikaze puppet to be thrown against Russia in the same way that Georgia has been thrown against Russia. There is a plan, and this is pure Brzezinski. Brzezinski would say, look, I installed this government. The mullahs were installed by Brzezinski. I write about this at some length in Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. That you can get from the Alex Jones InfoWars stores. I've also got Obama the Unauthorized Biography. Both of these reflect the fact that the overthrow of the Shah and the bringing in of Khomeini was a Carter-Brzezinski project against the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Brzezinski's world is determined by a fanatical hatred of Russia. And in this void of ideas, and you could see it, you could see this in public, the main public opponent of the neocons in terms of an alternative imperialist strategy has been Brzezinski since 2006, 2007, right? And he even tried to stop them from attacking Iran because he says, why do you want to attack Iran? I have plans for Iran. I can turn the Iranians against the Russians, and look what I can accomplish. Other possibilities, right? You've got Poland and Ukraine. This is Brzezinski country par excellence. Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, these places. What they'd like to do this winter is to have a crisis where Poland and Ukraine cut off the flow of natural gas from Russia into Western Europe, so you get a hysteria in Western Europe, people who are cold and sitting in the dark and can't cook their food, and start blaming Russia. So you play Europe, and above all, play these unstable dictatorships of Eastern Europe that are sort of NATO, IMF puppet states. Play them against Russia and try to get rid of both of them that way. That's Brzezinski.
You know what, folks? Let's take your calls on all these matters with Webster Tarpley in the next segment. Hopefully we'll hold them over past the hour. This is the Alex Jones Show. Infowars.com, PrisonPlan.com. Willie Nelson on the bus coming up in about 35, 45 minutes.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. We're the renegades in this atomic age. This atomic age of renegades. Renegades in this atomic age. This atomic age of renegades. And then the Renaissance came, and times continue to change. Nothing stayed the same, but
there were always renegades. All right, folks, I said I'd take your calls. We're with Webster Tarpley right now, the author of 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Obama the Postmodern Coup. And what's the latest one on Obama, Webster?
I'm afraid the latest one I don't think you can get from InfoWars, but rather from Amazon.com. Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography.
The Unauthorized Biography, and we've been going at it now for about an hour on what's coming up, and not only this election, but after this election. So let's start taking calls and get your views. Eric in Philly, you're on the line. What's on your mind, Eric?
Hey, what's up, everybody? I want to talk about 9/11 real quick.
Sure.
There is a lot of photographic evidence from the day after the buildings collapsed, the beams, you know, the way the beams are cut.
Mm-hmm.
When they do the controlled demolition.
Uh-huh.
You guys should have, like, some kind of picture book or something for people.
Well, I would say this. Richard Gage, who's Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and Stephen Jones both have excellent PowerPoint presentations. There's excellent YouTube presentations. I believe we show that evidence in Loose Change Second Edition. We show even more evidence on top of that in Loose Change Final Cut. That's all available for free online, and you really just have to look around for it. I mean, obviously, that's compelling evidence. I think that Stephen Jones is on the right track with some kind of a thermite basis to cut those beams in the manner that they were. Thanks for the call, Eric. Let's jump to Rick in South Carolina. Rick, what's on your mind?
Hi, Jason. Always good to hear you on the show.
Oh, thank you.
And Wester Tarpley is an incredible intellect. I want to jump back a little bit to the beginning of the show when you mentioned Dean Barkley and Cindy Sheehan, and we certainly want to get behind them and help them. But also, I wanted to throw somebody else as a name out, because what if we could get rid of Lindsey Graham? And
okay.
We're getting very close to it. There's a guy running neck and neck with him. Lindsey Graham has $4 million to run lots of ads. This guy has done it on a shoestring with $100,000 so far.
All right, give out a website.
And his name is Bob Conley. He's running as a Democrat against Lindsey Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And his website is aimhighwithbob.com, aimhighwithbob.com.
Do you have any comments on the presidential election, Rick?
I think that I'm going to vote third party. I'm probably going to vote for Chuck Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nader's a good one, too, and I think Cynthia McKinney is, too. I think we should vote our conscience. I think whoever we vote for, we should vote third party to let them know we're not eating the oatmeal anymore.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Webster? And I thank you for the call, Rick. That maybe, you know, even if we can't get our candidates elected, if we get a substantial amount of people voting third party, just third party, you know, Nader, McKinney, Baldwin, Barr, that does show the establishment that there is a large number of us.
I think people should look at a vote as a strategic asset. In other words, it's not a sacrament. You're not marrying anybody. You could get into strategic voting. Again, I think a lot of people listening to this are actually opinion leaders who should be able to move 10, 20, 50, 100 votes, not just their one wretched, miserable, tormented little vote at the end of all this, right? In other words, use your influence to move the masses. My points would be three. First of all, you want to stop Obama at all costs. That's the absolute imperative. No Obama. The second one, you've got to punish people who voted for the bailout.
All right,
anybody
come back with us after the break, Webster. It's InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. It's the Alex Jones Show. We'll be back after this.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, folks, we are back. It is Tuesday, October 28th, 2008, 1 week from Election Day. And we've been talking to Webster Tarpley in the past hour. We're taking your calls right now. And in these 5 minutes before we go to the next segment, Webster, and take more callers, I want you to go over those 3 points. Now, obviously, your agenda is to stop Obama at all costs. What are the other two big points that we have to get by on this election?
And then a few more comments. First of all, no Obama. Stop Obama at all costs. If you don't stop Obama, you're going off a cliff. You're leaping into an abyss. And most people have very little idea of what fascism was and what this is going to look like. Again, reread that thing from Biden. Tremendous, crushing, brutal economic austerity within the first 12 months, and an international confrontation probably with false flag or some form of aggression in the first 6 months. Secondly, anybody who voted for the bailout has to be punished. You got to vote against any elected official who supported that bailout. Obama, of course, was the one who organized the whole Black Caucus with a conference call to switch their votes into it. McCain, I think, vacillated because there were a lot of Republicans who were against it. You remember in the House, it was stopped for the first time around with quite a few Republican votes.
Mm-hmm.
The third one, you got to come out of this with gridlock. No one-party state. We do not want the presidency, the Senate, and the House of Representatives in the hands of the same people. The monstrosities of the Bush era are largely in the period of one-party Republican rule, which is from about January of 2003 to about January of 2007. That's the Republican one-party state, and that's what gets you the Iraq War and a lot of other things going with it. As far as these third parties go, Cynthia McKinney, Rosa Clemente is somebody that I've known from broadcasting in New York City. She needs to develop a much more aggressive critique of Obama. She could be very, very effective. Nader has probably attacked Obama more than others on the idea that Obama betrays the black community, doesn't care about them, uses them. Bob Barr's running mate, Wayne Root, is somebody who graduated from Columbia in 1983 and points out that he was in the same year and the same department as Obama at Columbia College, and nobody ever heard of Obama. There's no sign that Obama ever attended Columbia during those years. This is the big mystery. I think that's when he was recruited by Brzezinski. So if you're in a state where it's clear that it's going to go one way or another, if you're in a state like I guess Texas is pretty much a lost cause for Obama, then you can think about trying to make a statement with these third party votes. You got to do what's congenial for you, and some people obviously are going to want to support them, and maybe out of that some of these third parties can come out with a permanent infrastructure and some government funding. That would be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, the way I look at it, look, in New York, they're going to vote Obama no matter what. I don't see McCain getting the, New York vote. I'm voting third party, and I hope other people in New York vote third party as well. I mean, New York can show there's a lot of change. I think California is the same way. I mean, that's going Obama. I mean, you don't think that John McCain has a shot in either of those two states,
no,
do you?
No, but this is a very, very close election, and I do believe that any place where you have blue-collar workers, the group that's undercounted are the Puma Democrats, the Reagan Democrats, the Hillary Clinton Democrats. It's about 25% of the Democratic Party who, they will not vote for Obama. And I think it's going to be a surprise. The whole Appalachian area in particular is fundamentally hostile to Obama because they have a class instinct. They can see that Obama is a class enemy. He's somebody who's coming to impose crushing austerity in the name of the Wall Street banks. He's an elitist. He's an oligarch. He's a puppet. He has no life of his own. Everything that he's got has been given to him by these bankers.
All right, Webster, we're going to take some other calls on the next segment. And in about, I think, 20 minutes, it's going to be Willie Nelson on the tour bus, the legendary country music icon here at Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. I am Jason Burma, subbing in for Alex Jones. Remember, Ray McGovern at 2 p.m. We'll be back after this.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
All right, folks, we are back. It's The Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burma, sitting in with Webster Tarpley, our guest, and we've got callers on the line. We're discussing the bailout, the elections, Webster's books, Obama the Post, Modern Coup, and what is it, Obama the Presidency H2O? What was it? I'm sorry, man. What is it?
Obama, Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography.
The unauthorized biography, kind of like your George Bush unauthorized biography, which is really...
Yes, it's a tradition. Let me just add one quick thing. Sure. One person from the 9/11 Truth Movement who has, I think, completely understood the profound change, the phase change that we've gone through, is Phil Berg. And Phil Berg, I believe, will be at the Supreme Court here in Washington, the United States Supreme Court, attempting to argue his case, which has been defeated.
He's appealing it, right?
Yeah, this is an appeal. It's a direct interlocutory appeal to the Supremes that Obama is not a natural-born citizen, that he was, in effect, born in Kenya and naturalized as a citizen of Indonesia, making him an illegal alien. And people who are concerned about illegal aliens better start with this one, or it's going to be a lost cause any other way. So Berg is waging a valiant struggle, and I urge people to support him. He's got a website called Obama Crimes, and you can go there, give him a contribution, encourage him. He's gotten tremendous media impact. He's got 70 to 80 million hits on this website in about 2 months. And this is an example of somebody who learned the lesson of 9/11, which is covert operations by the intelligence agencies designed to manipulate public opinion are bad, whether they're left cover like Obama or the right-wing racist war on terror stuff from 9/11.
not to get off on a tangent before we go into calls, but you just mentioned the Kenya citizenship thing. Do you think that's something that might come out after this man is already president and will, like, automatically amend the Constitution?
No, I think there are a lot of things that are held over Obama's head for control. In other words, the whole Resco complex, the whole sewer and cesspool of corruption with Tony Resco, Nadkami Auchi, Al-Samari, these characters from, well, from Chicago, but also from the Eastern Mediterranean. They're all Levantine Arabs. Obama's got these three convicted felons that are his godfathers. I'm sure that the feds could indict Obama at any time, but they're holding that over his head. If people are interested in Obama, the unauthorized biography, I do that a comparison to Harry S. Truman, who was controlled, among other things, in the same way. With Truman, it was the Pendergast machine in Missouri that he came out of. Truman could have been indicted at any point that the bankers decided that he wasn't obeying them, and Obama will be the same story. I rather think that the hope of the ruling elite is to keep the citizenship issue as yet another means to beat him over the head if he starts getting rambunctious in office.
All right, let's go to callers. Let's take Aaron in California. Aaron, are you with us?
Yeah, hi, Jason and Webster. This is just wanted to talk about, Michelle Obama, when she gave that big speech where she was wearing that teal shirt of some type, right smack in the middle of her shirt was a sun symbol. Sure enough, today on the Drudge Report, there's a picture of her from yesterday on Jay Leno, or maybe a few days ago, and sure enough, she's got a sun symbol right on her shirt. I mean, is that a coincidence? Because I don't think so.
I'll say this, they're CFR, they're obviously globalists, they're obviously, social climbers as well. Are they into the occult? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they go to Bohemian Grove. I don't know how seriously they would take that if they did. I haven't seen a whole lot of evidence, but it does follow suit. It does seem like a lot of the upper echelon elites do get into that sort of thing. So is it a possibility? Yes. Is it a probability? Let me weigh in with some more evidence.
These people, this is the deployment of the trilateral Bilderberg Rand Chicago School right now. In other words, this is what the trilaterals and Bilderbergers are doing right now in our time. It's not somebody else. It's not like they want McCain or Hillary Clinton or, John Edwards. It's these people. Mm-hmm. They are the prime deployment. Now, that thing, I suppose that's the old Sol Invictus Mithra from the Byzantine Empire. The other thing you've got to see about these people is the foundation milieu. I haven't talked about that enough. The mother of Obama worked for the Ford Foundation, top official. Obama's whole life is working for foundations, the Joyce, the Gamaliel, the Woods, the Annenberg. His friend, the weatherman, terrorist, bomber, killer, butcher, cop killer, Bill Ayers, he's got all sorts of money from the Annenberg Foundation, tens of millions of dollars. Bernadine Dorn, another weatherman, terrorist, butcher, cop killer, comes with money from the MacArthur Foundation. How does this happen? Well, my explanation is, having known these people, I knew them personally, at least from a distance in SDS 40 years ago, those were always agents. They were always operatives. They were foundation-funded terrorists in the middle 1960s, and Obama has bought into this mentality. In other words, with Obama, you are in effect putting a weatherman terrorist into the White House, or someone who thinks like a weatherman terrorist, because as far as I can see, Bill Ayers is the guy's best friend, and that represents a very, very personal choice for him.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's jump to Daniel in California. Daniel, what's on your mind? You there, Daniel?
Yes, Jason. I'm a first-time caller, and I wanted to bring up the subject on why Obama supporters are so fervent over Obama.
Okay.
Basically, I've found a pretty plausible theory as to why that's the case. He uses hidden or covert hypnosis techniques in his speeches.
Let me say this before we get into like hypnosis and thing like that. People orate and speak a certain way. They move their hands. There's a guy out in the UK that does a show. It's not David Blaine-esque stuff. His name is Darren Brown. It's more how the mind works, how you're able to plant certain words. Certain part of the brain activate to move a certain manner. And these people are especially, agents that are recruited by intelligence organizations like the CIA and the NSA, when they're going to be speakers, are taught these techniques that are there to basically corral people, to convince them, to persuade them to do things. Isn't that correct, Webster?
Yes. In particular, though, there's also the emotional need. In other words, when somebody joins what amounts to a fascist mass movement or neo-fascist mass movement of the Obama type, they're doing this for the satisfaction of immediate emotional needs. In effect, they want to be duped. Part of it is the hatred for Bush, Cheney, and the neocons, which I can understand, which I, in some ways I share, has blinded people, and that's where you have to part company. They've lost all criteria of judgment as long as you're something other than Bush, Cheney. There's also this question of alienation. The previous caller mentioned Michelle Obama. The centerpiece of Michelle Obama's speeches during the primaries was this stuff about our souls are broken. We all have broken souls. We need the healing touch of the beatific personality, the one, the Messiah, the Mahdi, Barack Obama. There's a passage in Mein Kampf by Hitler where he talks about the fact that if you're a worker and you're in your factory, you're living an alienated life where nothing really belongs to you emotionally. But if you go to a National Socialist rally, then you feel fulfilled nationally, racially, and in all these other ways. And there's a very similar dynamic in these Obama mass meetings, right? The fact that he prefers stadiums. He prefers large crowds. Again, read Mein Kampf. Hitler says, the bigger the crowd, the more easy it is to control. The more people that are there, the more you can brainwash them. And the more undifferentiated, in other words, what you want is the massy mass. Not people who are there as consumers or workers or housewives, but just the mass. And when you've got the mass, especially at night, he says, at night is better because people are more irrational, then you can get them in the palm of your hand. And you're not convincing them with arguments. You're convincing them with an emotional experience, which is irrefutable. In other
words, like the hive-like mentality of being around all these things and just going with the flow.
Yeah, but it's dangerous. In other words, when you get a mass movement of this sort under depression conditions, after all the tremendous damage done to the society by Bush and Cheney, this is where it gets really, really scary. What we need is some time to build an alternative. Right now, there's tremendous confusion. People say, oh, I want the Austrian school. I want the free market. This is impossible in a depression. I advocate return to New Deal methods. They worked before, they will work now. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take a discussion process to get people to understand this, and they're also going to have to see in the course of this depression that a lot of that, the free market, Friedmanite, von Hayek, Austrian school, simply doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But right now, the main thing is to stop Obama so that you have at least a breathing space to try to get some kind of an alternative together, which you don't have right now.
Well, you were just talking about schools of philosophy, so I just got to ask you, have you seen this Zeitgeist addendum yet?
I'm not interested in this stuff because of this vulgar attack on religion, which I think is just useless and pointless. Uh-huh. You got to remember, the British intelligence is running a huge attack on Christianity with Christopher Hitchens, with this awful Darwinian character, Dawkins.
Dawkins, the God delusion.
Reactionary imperialist.
Well, there's some counter
kind of
stuff out there, too. Ben Stein just put out a movie called Expelled, The Case for Intelligent Design, where he takes Dawkins and others on pretty hardcore. He talks about social Darwinism, eugenics.
Look, here's the problem. Mm-hmm. We live in a Leibnizian least action universe. And it was the problem with Darwin and the problem with Malthus and anybody who follows them is that it assumes that the universe is entirely random, and that it's a matter of indifference whether there's development or higher energy states or whether there's not. So, therefore, Darwin has to assume that all the progress in evolution, which undoubtedly is there, there's no doubt about evolution and the progress towards humanity from lower life forms, that's all clear. But he says this is the blind watchmaker. This is all a matter of just chance interaction, and it could happen or it could not happen. No, it's wrong. The Darwinian Malthusian universe is not the universe that you see. The universe that you see is a Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz least action universe where there is, if you will, a built-in bias in the physical order of things in favor of development and higher energy states, because that's what you see.
Webster, can you stay one more segment with us?
Balls.
Can you stay one more segment with
us? Sure.
All right, thank you so much. We're going to be back after this with more calls. It's the Alex Jones Show with InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com.
Thank you.
Alex Jones Show. I'm Jason Thurman subbing in. You can check out my stuff over at loosechange911.com. You can go to myspace.com/Jason Thurman and befriend me and email me stuff. I don't get everything. I am a human being. I do make mistakes. I am imperfect, but I do put out some good products, I think, and I think Fabled Enemies is one of them. It really goes into the intelligence ties behind 9/11. It really lets you understand this international intelligence cartel, so I encourage people to grab that. Right now, we're finishing up with Webster Tarley. We've talked the bailout. We've talked Obama, the postmodern coup, the new Obama unauthorized biography. You can get that over at Amazon.com, and we're taking your calls. So let's jump to Kevin in Boston. Kevin, what's on your mind?
Thank you, Jason, for taking my call. Webster, I respect your research and your the books. And I agree with you that we want no Obama, punish those who voted for the bailout, and no to fascism. But I think the suggestion that by voting for McCain is going to be anything but Obama is just falling into the false left-right dialectic, you know, of paradigm, left-right paradigm, that both candidates are puppets of the New World Order. Chuck Baldwin, whether he gets in or gets not, you're at least you're voting for something that's not going to be more of the same, where there is no Obama is going to be defeated, and that's going to be a difference. They're going to be the same. The idea that the big deal, that the New Deal worked as an answer to the economic problems in the past, I think, is a fallacy. If we just simply end the Fed and we stop paying interest for use of our own money, that would be an answer. And I think there's a book Dan Hopsicker wrote that had a called Barry and the Boys, the CIA, the Mob, and America's Secret History. It had a picture on the photo on the cover of Barry Seal, CIA drug pilot, that it was in Mexico prior to the JFK assassination. He's seated with Portagos and several other well-known CIA agents. Portagos, of course, was named director of CIA by Bush. These people connect the Clintons and the Bushes right up through.
Your point, sir, is that this thing continues, that this Leviathan has been around for, you know, 30 or 40 years at least this wanta of the Bush regime and this shadow government continuity of government program, and you don't think it's going to end, right?
Yeah, to say no Obama, anything Obama, as if that is any sort of an answer, misses the point of all his research.
All right, Kevin, it's a good call. I got to give him a chance to respond.
There's something of a counter movement inside the Democratic Party. It's the Puma Democrats. You can go to Puma's Unleashed, Just Say No Deal. There's a whole complex of sites. They vary in political quality, quite obviously. But it is essentially the backlash out of the Democratic Party against the Obama-Howard Dean seizure of power. And one of the benefits here is that there's an openness to New Deal. Now, this candidate that you've mentioned, the problem there, of course, is that this is pure reactionary Republican Herbert Hoover economics. This is the kind of thinking that made the Great Depression as deep and as destructive as it was. There is no debate, really, about what effective economics are. It's New Deal economics. If you're in a depression, you better get New Deal economics up and down the line.
Let's get beyond that, because we only got a couple minutes. I want to know what you think about his power structure comment, that these guys have really...
I think this is misleading. In other words, it's clear that Wall Street has a very strong, decided preference. If you don't know that Wall Street's the enemy, that's a problem. A lot of libertarians think that government is their main enemy. I think that's extremely foolish. Government is dominated by Wall Street. If you look at look at somebody like Greenspan, is that the Federal Reserve is an independent power?
But, aren't they in essence their operational arm, their think tank arm, where
a lot of this is people looking for reasons not to mobilize, essentially to do nothing, and to say, well, I'll just vote for this one third-party candidate and leave it at that. That's really choosing, I think, a very facile way out of it.
All right, well, let's certainly take another call then. All right, let's jump to John in Ohio. John, what's on your mind? Yes. John, are you with me?
Yes, I agree with very much of the valuable things that Tarpley is saying. I really appreciate it. But I think my approach would be that we have to show the overlap between these neocon fascists of the Bush-Cheney group, the McCain group, and the Obama, because I think if I'm going to vote for somebody, it's going to be from a genuine left, a WSWS.org or a workers org type of real left point of view. The fake left has been the favorite of the CIA all the way back to the Vietnam War, where they preferred to have a fake liberal cover on right-wing propaganda, anti-communist, pro-Vietnam War propaganda.
Let me get Webster's...
What I'd like to say, okay, though, And what I'd like to say, though, is I think we can show the overlap between and compare Obama's reality. He is every bit as much of a warmonger and then some as Bush and Cheney around the world.
All right, I got to let you go, John. I got to let you go. Finish up, Webster. I got about 20 seconds.
In other words, the new group around Brzezinski and Soros is worse.
Mm-hmm.
Because the neocons have the elementary cunning of a bully, pick on defenseless countries. With Brzezinski, you don't have that. He's picking on Russia and China. He's picking on states that have...
All right, Webster, I got to jump. I got to jump. Thank you so much for joining us. Obama the Postmodern 2.
Big John. Big John.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6 foot six and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
All right, folks, we're back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm Jason Burmis, and I keep my promises. I said at 1:30 we were going to play Willie Nelson on the bus with Jesse Ventura and Alex Jones, and I keep my promises. So that's coming up momentarily in the long segment right now. But first, I've got to thank our great sponsor, New Vitality, Aloe's Colon and Body Cleanse. Aloe's is an herbal dietary supplement developed to support healthy bowel function. Aloe's is all natural ingredients, nutritionally support regularity and assist your body in removing accumulated waste. Aloe's contains 30 synergetically balanced natural herbs and enzymes that work together to improve your overall health. You know, like Alex will say, no magic pills, just good stuff. It really works. It helps you out. You can get this at 1-800-569-4056. That's 1-800-569-4056. Or you can click on the big banners over at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. So without further ado, folks, let's jump into Willie Nelson on the world. I was on the world famous tour bus with Willie Nelson. How cool is that? All right, let's play it.
Hey, Willie, thanks for coming on the radio this week.
Glad to be here. Yeah, enjoyed
that. How you doing? You feeling good?
Pretty good. You know, we're working every day. We played Billy Bob's last night. And, you know.
Willie, how many days a year do you work? Do you perform? Roughly. I mean, it's...
Well, concerts, probably a couple hundred.
Wow.
A year. Yeah, a year.
Like you say, it's just working 2 hours a day.
And, yeah. And then the other 22, you do other...
Yeah. That's a class on the paper.
Jesus, I'll tell you, You're supposed to be retiring, Willie.
By the way, he does one song after another.
Where are you going to give up?
He does one song after another, too. It's just famous.
Oh, no, I just saw him this summer. Like I said, I was at Hinckley at the casino, and Willie played up there. It was great. I got to tell you, though, Willie, you need a new guitar.
Well, it's getting kind of holy.
Yeah, that guitar.
Where is Trigger back there?
I'm looking at that guitar, and I'm going, my God, that's got to be Willie's first guitar he's up there with. Look at that son of a gun. It's wore out.
It's got a nice sound, though.
Yeah, it's got the best sound.
That's why you keep playing it, sure. Yeah. But no, I had to laugh.
He's the expert troubadour.
I looked at that guitar, and I says, I'll bet you that I'd like to have that do an interview with that guitar.
If he could talk, I'd have to shoot it.
If there's one state in America that embarrasses me, and I hate to say it, it's Texas.
Yeah.
On their voting turnout. I mean, their last government election, 26% of Texans voted for their governor. That's horrible.
Well, yeah.
It's embarrassing. We're a country.
But I think this year there's more reason to vote. People will get up and vote against something.
Yeah.
More than they will for something.
Willie, specifically.
This year they're voting against things.
Willie, specifically, you were talking about, you were starting to allude to, they went too far with 9/11, but in your own words, because it has backfired with 84% in major polls believing they're being lied to about it, and some polls about 60% believing it's an inside job. You know, polls 5 years ago, 36% saying inside job.
Wait a minute, Alex, I got to interject. Where are all these people? I'm running into the opposite. Nobody wants, everyone I run into does not believe.
But you're trying to talk to the government.
No. Even people on the street. I got chewed out yesterday watching a football game. When they asked me what I was doing, I said, I'm investigating 9/11. Oh, you're one of them crazies?
Well, I mean,
and
that's
these
probably
were regular people.
That's probably the
these were not. These were not. These were not people up in high-end government.
Well, Jesse,
these,
you're asking me a question. Let me tell you.
Okay.
Angus and Reid poll, Wall Street Journal poll, 84% believe they've been lied to about the official story. I can show you hundreds of polls. All I know is I've done several thousand radio interviews where the talk show host is attacking me and almost every caller agrees with me. Let's ask Willie. Willie, what response did you get for going public for 9/11 truth?
Well, I had a lot of people that agreed with me, and I had a lot of people that didn't. I'd go on people's shows like Amy Goodman, and she's, you know, she wanted to hear my views, and her and a lot of her listeners agree that there is something there. There is things to be answered. There are questions. It's not a cut and dried situation. Never was to me. So is there a reason to investigate? Well, hell yeah. Yeah. Are there anything, is there anything that they're trying to hide? Evidently, or they talk to Jesse.
Well, this is a paradox because most people I run into, you know, privately will say, oh, no, I know something's going on, or even publicly. Now, I do run into kind of the neocon 30%, you know, pro-war people, and you're watching a football game, aren't you? And, you know, with that kind of, and I'm not saying football, but, you know, that particular group, that's your Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh list.
No, it isn't. These are people I grew up with.
Really?
These are not Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh people.
Well, I'm guessing.
I was at the Gopher game watching it yesterday with some friends that I've known since I was in fifth grade. And a few of them there, when they asked me what I was doing now and I said I was investigating 9/11, they said, you're not one of them crazies that thinks that there was da-da-da-da-da-da to it.
There's a certain percentage of the people who will not believe that their government will do anything wrong.
Exactly.
You have to admit that there are that certain percentage.
And they're bigger than you think.
But they will not believe that their government is capable of doing what we say that may or may not have happened.
Exactly. Willie's right on with that, Alex. There is a
percentage. No, I'm not saying there isn't.
It's bigger than my in-laws. I told you about my in-laws. They're elderly people. I try to show them this. They want nothing to do. They will not believe that our country, the great country that they all served and went through World War II and all of this, they refuse to believe country could be evil.
I can't believe it. Well, it's that myth.
And you're not going to change them. I mean, I've pleaded with them. I said,
there's a lot of them that are not going to change their mind.
They will not change their mind. What.
There's a lot of them that still love what's going on out there. They love the Iraq War. They don't know why. Mainly because they don't have any kids over there. It's your kids and my kids.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that there is over 30% of the public still believes that WMDs were found, and around 30% of the public believes Saddam Hussein carried out 9/11. So,
I would say it'd be higher than that.
It was 55% 4 years ago, but now it's about 35% now, 30%, depending on the poll. But that's what I'm saying, is that you've got 30% that think WMDs were found. They think Saddam carried out the attacks. So I'm not saying, Governor, that I don't understand that there's people out there, but they're complete zombies living in total denial, and we know who they are. I don't care. If they say WMDs were found, I'm not going to agree with them, because we know it's delusional. So, yes, you've got 30% that if they were told the moon was made out of cheese by George Bush, they'd believe it. So
there you go. Because he's government, and as long as the president says it, it's okay.
No.
It's right. It's true. And you're not going to change those folks.
Yep.
Can't believe it. I'm actually ranting on Willie Nelson's bus.
I agree with Willie that because I love my mother and father-in-law dearly, and I respect them. They're terrific people, but they just will not accept that our government would be evil.
That's right. How do you get past that denial, Willie? I mean, how do you get folks to break out? Well, some people break out of it.
I don't worry about them.
Yeah,
I go on with my thinking and my job and let them live with their thoughts. I don't have to be responsible for them.
Yep.
Do you think the truth of 9/11 will ever officially come out like other things have?
I don't know. The truth about John Kennedy didn't come out.
Exactly.
I wanted to get you to talk about Kennedy. Give us your view on that.
I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened at 9/11. I do know that a lot of investigations went on with Kennedy that were stifled, just like what you're doing now. They tried to hold that back. And we know he was killed. We don't know who done it. The other argument of 9/11, we know those buildings fell. Now, a lot of people would think it was done this way. We think it was blown up intentionally. So we're never going to be able to convince everybody, and we're never going to really know for sure.
No. And Willie's exactly right, because the simple way they get to that is by the removal of all evidence.
All evidence is gone.
Like when John Kennedy was assassinated, the first thing Lyndon Johnson did was he sent the limousine was where a homicide took place. There should have been the yellow tape around that limo. That limo shouldn't have been touched till investigators went through it with a fine-tooth comb. Instead, LBJ orders it sent to Cincinnati. It's cleaned and refurbished. Not one person got to look at the actual crime scene, which is backwards to what normally is done. That's what causes, for me, the light to go on, because when they start doing a crime scene the exact opposite of the way it's supposed to be done, that tells you that there's ulterior forces involved here. Now you shift to 9/11. In 9/11, the high priority was removal of everything. It was not investigating it. There were people, the priority went to the removal. The investigators were considered secondary. Well, that's the exact opposite.
Well, they
opposite.
Got them out.
Well, that's the exact opposite of the way it should be. Hold off, Alex.
Black boxes.
That's the exact opposite of the way it should be. The investigation should always take priority. And even if they use the excuse, well, we were searching for bodies, there could have been alive people in there, which you can accept, it still doesn't relieve them. They could have removed that metal and put it somewhere to where later it could have been looked at.
And that's what we all assumed they were doing.
They were doing, but it turned out they weren't doing that. They were destroying it all. They were building a new ship out of it as a monument. They were selling it to China and melting it down and doing everything. And so it's come down to today, and Willie's exactly correct. We will never know, because here's the reason. Now we're all experts.
That's right.
And because with no evidence, with no concrete scientific evidence to go to, all of our opinions are valid, whether they be for or against, because there's no
but
way to
dispute
that. But
isn't the same thing happened at the Pentagon?
Yeah.
The very same thing happened. They came in, they cleaned up everything, they took all the video cameras away, and they dared anybody to say anything.
Yeah, and so now there's no way to prove or disprove
anything. Well, Willie, isn't that right there, historically, especially in a criminal investigation, a cover-up is generally seen as an evidence of guilt, or that there should be a massive investigation. Can you speak to that?
Well, I think that's true. Anytime you cover up evidence or take evidence away, you have an agenda there. You're trying to stop people from knowing what happened. And I really do believe that's what happened.
So I think the cover-up's the biggest piece of evidence that it is an inside job.
That certainly plays a huge role in it.
What's your take on how they blocked the funding for the firefighters and police and emergency workers from all that deadly dust? Why wouldn't Congress? I mean, we've been to Congress. I've made a film about it, and they just say no, we're not going to take care of it, even though all the CAT scans and hospitals say it's killing them. And this firefighter uses a 600 number. The official government reports a few months ago say it's over 1,100 have died.
Well, first of all, there's a long list of things that we could talk about that we don't like about this government and what it's doing and what it has done. And it goes back further than the Bush administration. It goes all the way back to other administrations a long time ago, when this country started going the wrong way and started doing things around the world thinking that we were the world's policeman, and we were the world's resource gatherer. If there was something over there you had, we're going to come get it. We'll make you a deal you can't turn down. So that's been going on as long as I can remember, as long as I've been watching our government operate. So this is just one more time, I think, that they're stepped over the line doing things that they, as far as I'm concerned, that's not what I hired them for. They work for me, they work for you, they work for Jesse, and they're screwing up.
Well, I think that, like you said earlier, the people are finally really getting fed up, and I don't think they're going to go back to sleep again. I think the revolution's
I
on.
Do.
Well, let me.
I do.
I know, Mr. Gleeman.
I think they're going to go back to sleep. Well,
yeah,
you can wait.
Go back
yeah,
to sleep.
We'll wake them up. Time. We'll wake them up, but I bet they go back to sleep again.
Well, Willie, what do you say?
I hope I'm wrong.
I talked.
I believe some of them will go back to sleep because some of them didn't want to get woke up. But there are a group of intelligent young people out there, not
very many of my age or your age, most of the people my age or your age think just exactly like what you said. Things are the way they are. Don't mess with them. Go do your job. Keep your head down. You know, don't stir up anything. But there's some young people out there with a lot of guts, a lot of balls. They're going to stir it up. And they're going to elect Obama. They're going to elect some government officials. They're going to elect some senators and congressmen who go in there and start doing the right thing for a while. And then you're right. In a little while, everybody will go back to sleep. And the guys will say, all right, we're going to let them have it for 4 to 8 years because look how we screwed it up. Let's back out of the way and let them have our problems that we created for a while. And we'll go over here and we'll reorganize and we'll think it over and we'll raise some more money and we'll go get it again.
I agree fully because Alex, we talked about history and how if you don't study history, the old cliche, you're deemed to repeat it. Well, look at my generation and Willie's. We're the generation of the 60s. We were supposed to be the rebels. We were supposed to be the ones who were anti-establishment, the ones who learned from Vietnam, the ones that saw all this stuff go down. And yet, what has happened to all of us? Where did we all go?
I was so proud of the peaceniks. I was so proud of the guys who got out there and fought against the war and come home from Vietnam and say, hey, that's wrong. But they went back to sleep.
That's right.
What happened to peace on earth? I remember growing up that was what we were all taught was going to happen one day. I go to church and they say, well, you've got the Prince of Peace, Jesus, he's going to come and there's going to be peace on earth for 1,000 years. I said, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Where is it?
But that's essentially the problem.
We do it and hopefully something will change.
But the problem is this. Everybody lives in their own little world, and if their own little world is not affected directly, they will ignore it.
But right now, with the economy sinking, their world is affected.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and gasoline, they are affected.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have to start growing their own vegetables again.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. I'm glad to see them having to get out and dig in that soil and plant a seed and sit back and watch it grow. But that's America.
Yeah. And hard times will force us to...
Where they've been is not American. Living on, 8 or 10 houses and 6 yachts and going off and starting these big corporations where they screw me and you out of money and they go overseas. That's not America. Now, I want to see one of those guys get out there and have to grow his own potatoes.
We have to stop electing Democrats and Republicans. And we have to start electing and destroying this system they've created that is so corrupt within itself that we're a two-party dictatorship now. Politics in America today is identical to pro wrestling. And what I mean by that is, in front of the cameras and the public, we all hate each other. I'm going to kick my opponent's butt. I'm going to whale him from here to high water and beat the crap out of him. Yet behind the scenes, we all are friends going out to dinner.
Went to dinner together.
And it's all a work.
All intermarried.
Show business.
It's show biz. Up till 2006, you had a Republican Congress and a Republican president. Then along came the election of 2006, which was the war in Iraq. The U.S. people spoke clearly. They said, get us out of Iraq. So they elected the Democrats. The Democrats took both houses. And 2 years later, are we out of Iraq? No.
All right, there you have it. Willie Nelson, Jesse Ventura, and Alex Jones on the bus. It's the Alex Jones Show. I'm Jason Burma sitting in. Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. PrisonPlanet.tv. We're going to have Ray McGovern, the 26-year CIA analyst, the veteran, on to talk about the current election, on to talk about his latest article where he really denounces the Washington Post, I believe, for their little editorial page. Oh, it looks like the war with Iran is off the table with both us and Israel. How sad. And he really goes over that, how that's not a sad thing, and he does hope it's the truth, and I doesn't understand their attitude towards it. But in this segment, I want to read this article out of the National Post. Now, this is a big paper out in Canada, and Jonathan Kay, I guess, this guy who writes for them for many years, wrote something about the 9/11 truth movement, and then he had to write this. Jonathan Kay on the humbling frustrations of debating 9/11 truthers. Want to fill up your inbox? Write a column denouncing the 9/11 truth movement. These are the people who dismissed the official 9/11 explanation as White House peddled lie. One truther sect believes the American government, or rogue elements within it, planned the September 11th attacks under a false flag. Another concedes Al-Qaeda's involvement, but insists the plot was known to the warmongering Bush administration. Other truthers favor more exotic explanations, featuring missiles, remote-controlled airliners, the Mossad, mini-nukes, and even space weapons. What they all have in common, I've learned, is a hate-on for journalists who blithely dismiss them as nut bars, as I did a few weeks ago in a blog post about ex-liberal candidate and unapologetic truther Leslie Hughes. Normally, I confess, these are the sort of correspondence I delete from my inbox without much guilt. As with the all conspiracy theorists, see, this is what I don't like, debate is pointless, since they have no chance of convincing me, nor I them. Why waste my time parsing their arguments? But see, he admits he won't be swayed no matter what. But something about the truther email I got aroused my interest. For one thing, there was a lot of it, which perhaps should not surprise me. As the Post's Adrian Humphreys reported last week, 39% of Canadians either reject or doubt the official explanation for the 9/11 attacks. That's 40%. That's 4 in 10. That's a major thing in Canada. Major! Secondly, many of these messages, a majority in fact, were lucid and coherent, well-written even. Some of the senders had letters after their names, and even email addresses contained the domain names of recognizable universities. Conspiracy theorists they may be, but they're certainly not subhuman weirdos who try to convince me the Holocaust never happened, nor the anti-social paranoiacs who send me weekly updates about their decade-long litigation campaign against their ex-landlords. So I like that, too. He at least admits, you know, we have a standing. Thirdly, they have a point. Something that hit home when I read this stinging comment in a message from Winnipeg area writer Dallas Hansen. Take a look at the mountain of evidence suggesting a black op. I'm sure you're a smart guy, but posturing as though that you've got all the answers to 9/11 and defaming those who question the explanation we've been given is a little much. September 11th wasn't a black op, but Hansen is right that, like mainstream journalists, I overplay my intellectual hand when it comes to 9/11 and just about everything else besides. I could lie to Mr. Hansen and my readers and tell them I've read the U.S. government's 571-page 9/11 Commission report or Popular Mechanics Magazine authoritative report on debunking the 9/11 myths, but the truth is that I haven't. I never felt the need to because on a purely instinctive level, I've always believed the truther's case was complete nonsense. But he cops to it and he says he's going to read those things. Well, I sent him an email urging him to watch Fabled Enemies and then the Loose Change series, and I hope you help me out and do the same. I'd like to see him take a look at that evidence. Ray McGovern coming up next at the 8 after. This is the Alex Jones Show. Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, and streaming live, PrisonPlanet.tv. The Alex Jones Show. I'm Jason Burmes sitting in. If you missed any of the first 3 hours, the interviews with Jesse, the interviews with Willie on the bus, the Barack Obama discussion with his assassination attempt, the parent one that just sounded completely off the wall, the hour and a half we spent with Webster Tarpley. Remember, that gets restreamed over at Infowars.com for free all day until the next broadcast. It's really amazing. Alex Jones just provides so much ammunition for the info war, and I just want to thank him from the bottom of my heart for everything he's done for me, helped me put together Fabled Enemies, which I really do believe is an important picture, and I hope you go out there and pick it up from Infowars.com, make copies, and hand them out. But more importantly, today I'm not asking for a donation. I'm not even asking for a vote. I'm asking you to go to this nationalpost.com website and email Jonathan Kay and implore him to watch Fabled Enemies and Loose Change Final Cut. We got Ray McGovern coming up in the next segment, but I'm going to run through a couple calls. Open topics. Of course, we don't screen your calls here at InfoWars. And then in the second half of that interview, we're also going to take your calls. So let's jump to Jameel in Cleveland. What's on your mind?
Yeah, how you doing today?
Good.
Yeah, I wanted to speak. I really was calling to speak to your last guest, but I want to speak on some of the points that he made, some of the bashing of Barack Obama.
Okay.
First, I want to talk about him saying that Ralph Nader was stepping up, saying that Barack Obama is duping the black community and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing about that I want to say is Ralph Nader doesn't speak up any time when issues go on in the black community and the injustice is done to black people in this country. I've never heard Ralph Nader speak up.
Well, he's a bit of a gun grabber. I'll give him that. I mean, he always talks about, against automatic weapons in inner cities and stuff like that. I'm not really for that. So, I feel like that's a form of gun control. It's kind of soft. But continue.
Well, I mean, when I speak of black, I'm black, so I'm going to tell you, like, some of the, I don't know if you know what's going on, but some of the things that go on, like with the Gina 6, Sean Bell killing it, and just all kind of injustice.
So are you voting for Barack?
Let me finish. I've never heard him speak up, and he's been on Al Sharpton's show, so it's not like he hasn't had a chance to speak on those things, but when he's on Al Sharpton's show, and that's about as much in the black community as much as you can get. I mean, the bigger opportunity is you can get to speak to the black community. He hasn't done that.
Uh-huh.
And also, when it comes to Barack Obama, not caring about the black community, guys like Professor Charles Oventree, Dick Gregory, Martin Luther King III, these are some of the most prominent people in the black community, and they're not part of the New World Order. Matter of fact, these people are some of the most anti-New World Order people you can get if you ever listen to Dick Gregory's commentary.
Yeah, but I don't know how that translates into Barack Obama being anti-New World Order.
I'm about to tell you. You ever listen to Dick Gregory speak, and he speaks on Warren Ballantyne's radio show all the time. He does the show like once a month, and he gives him a whole hour. He's always speaking against the New World Order, and he's always breaking things down. He's kind of like Jordan Maxwell. He's like the black Jordan Maxwell.
Okay.
All of these people back Barack Obama. So if Barack Obama is so much this globalist and New World Order people, why are all these prominent people who are very anti-New World Order?
Well, first of all, there's
Reverend Wright is very, very anti-New
World Order. All right, hold on. Let me tell you. First of all, there's a controlled opposition, number one. Number two, did you listen to his Berlin, Germany speech about 6 months ago?
I didn't listen to the whole
thing. Yeah, you didn't. Listen, man, just go check it out. Just type in Barack Obama in Berlin, Germany. If you can't tell that this guy has a globalist perspective on the world, I mean, he's really literally talking about a 1.5 million man youth brigade. He's also talking about global citizenship. Hold on. And his wife and him are open CFR members. It's a globalist organization. He's a total globalist, man. And look, I'm voting for a black woman for president. You know, to me, race doesn't have that much of significance. I like her policies. I think that Cynthia McKinney is much more of a real person, much more of a bulldog. She's the real anti-New World Order black candidate, and I'm going to vote for her. I mean, I don't see this revolutionary that they're portraying on the television. I don't see the guy that's on the Zoomies t-shirt when I go to the mall as, like, this guy that's going to help us. I thank you for the call. I thank you for the opinion, man. I got to jump because I got Ray McGovern coming up after the break, but we're going to take your calls in about 30 minutes. Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. It's the Alex Jones Show. First 3 hours of the program, you can go over to InfoWars.com and listen to it for free. I do want to make one point to the last caller. Hopefully he is still listening in before we go to Ray McGovern. Just because somebody's African-American does not mean that they can't be part of this globalist system, a part of this quote-unquote New World Order. Let me read you something off the Harvard University website, the Gazette News, from September 27th, 2001. Now, this is basically 2.5 weeks after 9/11, because you did just mention people like, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., a great man. But then you mentioned people like Al Sharpton and, you know, other people who were under suspicion and of just being corrupt. I mean, not necessarily being part of any globalist organization, but very corruptible. All right. This is what Jesse Jackson had to say in front of Harvard University 2.5 weeks after 9/11. It is easy to handle triumph. Can we handle trouble or disaster, said Jackson. Let us rise together for hope, healing, and a vision for the new world order. And he uses this term all the time. He's not the only guy. So I just wanted to bring that up to Jameel.
look into it. Like I said, I'm voting for an African-American candidate for president. On November 4th, 1 week from today, I will be voting for Cynthia McKinney, the Green Party candidate for president. I encourage people not to waste their vote and vote third party. I disagree with Tarpley. I don't think getting McCain into office is probable or possible unless, you know, the elitists really want that and they rig the voting machines to do so. All right. Without further ado, we're going to bring on Ray McGovern, the 26-year CIA analyst. He debriefed people like Dick Cheney and others in the 80s. His latest editorial is Attack on Iran Off the Table, and he really goes after the Washington Post for really putting a downswing on it, like it's a bad thing that the attack on Iran may be off the table both here and in Israel. Thanks for joining us, Ray.
You're welcome, Jason. Glad to be with you.
Now, Ray, you know, before we get into this editorial, election day's a week away, you know, I interviewed you a little over 2 years ago, right in the run up to the 2006 election, and we talked about the Democratic Congress getting in and possibly emboldening them. 2 years later, we're not out of Iraq. I mean, obviously, there are Democrats that I want to see, and I'd love to see Cindy Sheehan take Pelosi's seat. Oh, man, that would be a huge triumph. But give me your take on the election right now.
Well, if I take five steps back, Jason, I say to myself, wow, I thought it was going to be a choice between a McCain-type person and Mrs. Clinton. That would have been a real, real problem for me. I never thought that I would have a candidate running who has said sensible things about Iraq. I had said less than sensible things about other things, but certainly, in my view, you have to look at what the alternative is, and I noted your advice to people and your own decision to support my good friend Cynthia. However, I would ask people to reflect on what that could mean, because that happened once before. Lots of people supported a third-party candidate, and we got George W. Bush. So think hard about that before you waste your vote.
And you're obviously talking about Ralph Nader, who has run in the previous two elections and also in this one, correct?
For whom I also have great respect. It's just that the realities are such that the very troublesome things and they intrude, and I just still can't get over it.
But I think my problem with Barack, though, is this. He does talk about a de-escalation in Iraq, but that's been on the table for some time now, and it never seems to go through. And, you know, we had Webster Tarpley on a couple hours ago, and he really talked about how Obama is talking about possibly an invasion or a bombing of Pakistan to go after the remnants of the Taliban or al-Qaeda and bin Laden, and that could cause a whole new situation in the Middle East and Eurasia.
Yeah, Jason, again, I know Webster. I think what one has to do is be really careful about taking campaign rhetoric as a sign of real intention. I mean, look at what Obama has said about Israel, for example. I mean, it's almost sickening how the candidates vie among themselves to tell the American public who loves Israel the best. Joe Biden trying to outdo everyone else by saying, yeah, we all love Israel, but I love Israel with a passion, you know? I mean, that's really ridiculous. So you expect that kind of rhetoric from Obama, from anybody. And when he talks about, you know, about Afghanistan, for example, he has to sort of show the American people how tough he is, that he is up to the task, particularly military task. But I would fully expect, and I've been wrong about these kinds of things before, but I would fully expect that once were he to be in office, that the people that he would gather around him would tell him what a feckless exercise not only Iraq but Afghanistan has been, and that the history dictates that no one wins this kind of battle or occupation, and he would come to his senses. So I'm not willing to address what Obama says about these things as though they should be taken at face value.
So you do think that he's somewhat genuine and there's a possibility that these aggressions in the Middle East will subside after he's elected and he puts in an administration that you feel would de-escalate the war?
Well, yeah, I have, you know, the notion of the candidate who says, you know, 100 years is no problem, coming into office turns my hair on end. I don't think that a fellow who's made his reputation by crashing airplanes and getting shot down has shown any real acuity with respect to policies to be crafted or followed. And so it's a matter of compared to what, finally. And, you know, when I look at the Democratic candidate and you look at the debates, there's a fellow with a cool head, easy and eager to learn. And I think he's teachable. I think he will probably avoid the mistakes of predecessors who thought they could come into Washington and diss the people in the press and others with whom you really have to sort of work out a compromise so that they will give you half a chance to have your message heard. And, you know, it's going to be not a very hard act to follow. I mean, these 8 years have been a disaster for a country. And, you know, just as my friend Bobby Gates, the Secretary of Defense, just as he followed Rumsfeld and had like a 2-year honeymoon, so, too, I think whoever replaces Bush, presumably if it's the favored contender, that he will have a honeymoon period where people will just so delighted to listen to a person who just conceivably might tell the truth on occasion, that if he's of a mind to, and I'm hopeful he is, he can change these crazy policies.
Well, I don't share your optimism. I feel like he is the slicker candidate by far. He's obviously more well-spoken. When John McCain comes out and talks about a 100-year war, or he talks about us being the enemy, I mean, I think you can kind of see the senility in his face. He doesn't look the healthiest. I can't even believe that they've put him up there. Honestly, in the run-up to this, I thought that they would go with someone more like a Romney. I mean, McCain's establishment, and The Palin pick, I mean, it's bizarre. It's not like he has a strong ticket. It's almost like they're throwing the election. I mean, do you really think that McCain has a shot at winning this?
This is not my field of expertise, Jason. Mm-hmm. I'm just my opinion is in this area is not worth anything more than the next person's. But there are so many variables and so many shenanigans been played over the last couple of elections that I would encourage anyone who is as afraid as I am of Palin and McCain to make sure not only that their vote is taken, but that their vote is counted.
All right. Well, let's jump to this Iran situation. You wrote this editorial. We've discussed Iran at length on the radio, in TV interviews with you, InfoWars, and myself. Do you really think right now we are off the table with Iran? It looks like there will not be a war of aggression out there.
Yes, I do, Jason. And I say that as one who for 3 years was saying that chances were at least equal and probably greater than equal that Bush and Cheney, to fulfill their promise to Israel, would, quote, take care of Iran. What's changed? Well, there are a bunch of things that have changed. One is that the senior uniformed military in this country have shown a little guts for a change. We had Admiral Fallon resigning after saying, we're not going to do Iran on my watch, resigning rather than letting himself be on the receiving end of an idiotic order to start a war with Iran and risk the fortunes and lives of all those troops he has in Iraq, Afghanistan, and in the Gulf. He didn't want to put himself in that position, and so he in effect quit by going to the press and saying, we're not going to do Iran. That would be crazy. Now, Admiral Mullen, Mike Mullen, who came in, I was an Army officer, so it's really hard for me to say these good things about Navy admirals. But Admiral Mullen, man, that guy's got guts, guts that we haven't seen. He comes back from Israel and says it would be very foolish to open yet a third war, a third front in that part of the area. And then we later learned that we learned this from the Israeli really press. I mean, you don't learn anything like this from the American press, so what I call the fawning corporate media. We learned from the Israeli press that when Mullen was there, he braced his opposite numbers in the Israeli leadership, and he said, look, don't even think Don't even think of any tricks in the Persian Gulf or anything that would provoke the Iranians so that they would attack you and then you would expect us to come in. We're not going to come in if you provoke the attack. And then, you know, the real blitz, Jason. You know what he brought up? He brought up the...
Well, we'll bring it up on the other side because we were just about to go to break. We're with Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. This is the Alex Jones Show, PrisonPlanet.tv. All right, folks, we are back. It's the Alex Jones Show. I'm Jason Burmis, subbing in. I'm a filmmaker. I've made Fabled Enemies, Loose Change Second Edition, Loose Change Final Cut. I'm currently working on Invisible Empire, and I hope that you go to InfoWars.com right now and order copies, make copies, hand them out. This is vital information. We're with Ray McGovern, 26-year CIA veteran, and he's discussing with us the military personnel who have returned home and said no war with Iran, and you were just discussing a gentleman who had just returned from Israel and said the same thing, Ray.
Yes, this was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Jason, Mike Mullen, an admiral, who was out there in June, actually, and told the Israelis, not only do we not want a new war with Iran, but don't even think about trying to provoke one by doing something to let the boom go up. Now, what I was starting to say is he did something incredibly gutsy, something that no U.S. statesman has done in 41 years, and that is he raised the incident of the U.S. Liberty ship that was deliberately attacked by Israel on the 8th of June, 1967, with 34 crewmen killed, 174 wounded. It was an incredible attack, and we have bulletproof evidence that it was intentional. Exactly why the Israelis did it is a matter of some speculation.
You're talking about the USS Liberty, of course.
Yes. And what Mullen said was, he said, we don't want any more USS Liberty-type incidents. Ooh. Now, why was that so powerful? Because the Israelis know that Mullen knows, as a naval officer, what happened back on that terrible day, June 8th, 1967, and that Mullen was not going to let it happen again. That's about as direct, that's about as clear a message as you can send to the Israeli leaders. And right after that, we saw a slight attenuation of the propaganda out of Israel and out of the United States with respect to what a terrible threat Iran is or was, but really isn't. Now, the next big factor that has made it unlikely that we will be striking Iran by air is Russia, the Russian bear.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about the bear market. Well, I'm talking about the Russian bear who has it up to here now with his nose being tweaked. What happened was the Russians saw Israel and saw us, that is Cheney and Elliot Abrams and those types in the White House, as being behind that idiot Saakashvili's attack on South Ossetia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why was that important? Well, the Russians are up to here, and they said, look, you know, not only are we going to repel this attack, and they did so brutally, I don't hold any brief for that, not only are we going to repel the attack, but don't even think about Georgia becoming part of NATO or the Ukraine. And besides, Israelis, if you thought that you could use Georgian airfields to attack Iran, look at the map, you folks. The only feasible way without flying over Iraq and other countries who would deny overflight permission, coming down from Georgia would have been quite feasible. And that, according to some reports, is what the Israelis had in mind. So the Russians came down real hard. Olmert went up to Russia. Other people went up to Russia, and they said, look, it's all over. No, don't even think about attacking Iran. And they said the same thing to us. And again, we intelligence analysts look at all sources, and we saw a very sharp fall off of all the warnings out of the White House about how bad Iran is, how it's supplying our opponents in Iraq, and how it's developing. They all fell right off in early August, and it's still pretty far down. Two other factors I've mentioned briefly. You know, AIPAC, the American-Israel political, what was it, Political Something Committee, they drafted legislation. Actually, this is not so bizarre. They do this regularly. They drafted legislation which formed the substance of bills in the House and in the Senate, which amounted to calling for President Bush to blockade Iran, an act of war, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, traditionally, when the Israelis draft this kind of legislation, they put the word out, and 100 representatives, you know, co-sponsored the thing, like, you know, like before you could say Jack Robinson, okay? And mm-hmm. that happened. But guess what? And the same thing happened in the Senate. Guess what? Grassroots folks inundated their representatives with calls, with emails, with faxes and everything else, and got them thinking. And actually, some of the co-sponsors withdrew their sponsorship of that bill because they were afraid that, indeed, the president would be encouraged. Here's Congress telling him to make an act of war on Iran. I think they also didn't want to fall victim to what I call the Hillary Clinton factor. You know, Hillary actually thought it would be a smart political move when she voted for the war against Iran.
All right, hold that thought, Ray. We're going to be with you after the break. We're going to take your calls. Ray McGovern, CIA analyst. It's the Alex Jones Show. PrisonPlanet.com, PrisonPlanet.tv.
Baby, I'm going to leave you.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show. Because there's a war on for your mind.
All right, folks, we're back. It's the Alex Jones Show. I am Jason Burmis, sitting in for Alex Jones. We are with Ray McGovern. We're discussing the upcoming election. And he just mentioned that Hillary Clinton was a bit of a warmonger against Iran. I mean, she's pretty much said everything was on the table. I want him to finish up his point on that. And then I want to get his take on this coming international crisis that people like Joe Biden, Colin Powell, and now a key member of the Pentagon advisory panel are talking about. I want to know whether he thinks this is a reality. Is this something that's coming up? I mean, obviously, with the bailout and the economy, anything's possible. But why don't you finish up your point and then comment on that?
Sure. Yeah. The business about the attack on Iran being off the table, probably. I just finish up by saying that it was a grassroots effort, but many of the congressmen who actually had co-sponsored the bill withdrew that co-sponsorship, and I think it wasn't altogether altruistic. I think they were thinking about 2 years from now when they're running again, mm-hmm. and there's a wider war still, and they voted for it. What I call the Hillary Clinton effect would set in. You'll recall that back in October 2002, she thought it was the politically smart thing to do to vote for a war. Turned out to derail her attempt to be president. It will derail the attempts of others to be representatives or senators if they voted for a wider war, and that's why the whole thing was squashed. And this is the first time in recent memory that I've seen a grassroots effort able to defeat legislation not only proposed by but drafted by AIPAC. And the last thing, of course, is the financial crisis. I think everybody kind of realizes that we've run out of money. We're spending billions in Iraq and Afghanistan every week. So where do we get the money to get involved in a war with Iran, which is not at all like Iraq or Afghanistan, but rather a very, very strong country with lots of armed forces that dwarf in effectiveness what Saddam Hussein had before we attacked Iraq.
So do you think there's a chance of this international crisis that Biden and Powell and other people in the Pentagon are now talking about in the first months of his presidency, if he gets in?
Well, Joe Biden is not one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of runs off the mouth without thinking about what he's going to say. And we're also dealing again here with the political rhetoric rather than reality. My guess is that Biden was just trying to draw a parallel between between Obama and JFK.
See, even you did it. We can't just accuse the neocons now. That's all right. Continue.
My apologies.
That's all right.
Senior moments here. It's always politically good to compare your candidate with John Kennedy, for whom lots of people have continuing respect, including myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know, at least those of us old as I am, that Kennedy was confronted. He was young, and he was confronted by Khrushchev. He was actually confronted by the CIA. He was confronted by our military when they decided to go through with that Bay of Pigs foolishness and then expected Kennedy to bail him out by sending the Air Force in to save these guys. They mousetrapped him. Mm-hmm. And so he was beset by all kinds of challenges, not only from Khrushchev in Vienna in May of 1961, but also the Bay of Pigs before that. And, you know, there was the Berlin, the trouble over Berlin Access and everything else. So my guess, and it's only a guess, is that what Biden was referring to is, look, you know, Kennedy, initially braced and shocked by all this, came through. And even when the challenge to us in Cuba with the Russians sending missiles down there, when that happened, he was able to handle that in a cool and collected way, but a strong way, and he made the Russians back down. That's the memory most of us have of JFK. And I think it's nothing more than that. I don't think Biden has any special, matter of fact, given his record, he certainly has no special foresight or insight into what's going to happen over the next half a year.
Well, I hope you're correct. All right, let's take some callers. I hear that Brian in Arizona disagrees, so you jump to the front of the line, Brian. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Hi, doing good. How are you?
Good.
I think just, first of all, I want to make one comment about what they're saying about Barack will be tested. I think they realize they need to warn everybody, and what they're going to stage is more false flag terrorism, but they need to brainwash the people and instill it in their minds first. And the one disagreement I have is about some footage that was used in a film, and better footage could have been used. I happen to personally know the guys from VTHEPentagon.com, and they actually have even newer testimony other than the two Pentagon police officers on site at the Sitco that said the plane came in a different route on 9/11 than what the government's official fairy tale said. And they have Lloyd, the cab driver, now they've re-interviewed him. They've gone out and they've seen the cab that was staged on the south side flyover, and even Lloyd's wife agrees that it was a north side flyover. They've got a whole lot of new information.
Yeah, you know, I like those guys, and I like what they do. I just feel like focusing on one issue like that when we're never going to get the 84 tapes that are still classified, you know, out to the public. I mean, God bless them for their research. You know, we went out to D.C. with them 2+ years ago. You know, we interviewed Lloyd the cab driver. We interviewed the pastor who was the first on the scene. You can see there. We interviewed the first guy with a camera on the scene, Bob Pugh, where you saw his footage all over the AP. I just think that issue is just, it's more of, you know, we already know they allowed whatever to happen at the Pentagon to happen. I mean, that was something I've discussed with you years ago, Ray, is that Norm Mineta now on 6 or 7 different occasions speaks about with, you know, whatever hit the Pentagon, we had about 20 minutes beforehand to do something about it. We had, you know, 120 miles out, 100 miles out, 50 miles out, 20 miles out, to the order still stand. So I think that's a more compelling issue. And to really focus on minutia like that at this point is kind of, you know, it's counterproductive. I thank you for the call, Brian. Let's go to Mike in Washington. Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, is this you?
Hey, Mike.
Hey. Yeah, this is kind of off subject, but I have an idea for the iPhone.
Okay.
The widget, like, you know, the Obama, you click on the widget and it brings up Obama's little site.
Okay.
I think Alex needs to have one of these so you can, if you look at Obama's thing, you can just go with it.
Well, I'll tell you what, right now I'm looking at Infowars.com and he's got something on the right that says, listen to the Alex Jones Show live on your cell phone. So maybe you can do that. I mean, that's probably coming up. We're moving into new offices. We're trying to put together new things. I'm putting together my own show. We're trying to become more of a mainstream outlet to people. I mean, we can only do so much. I mean, when you literally have a staff, and I'm not part of that staff. I'm a staff of one. But when you have a staff like Alex of 10 people and 2 of those guys work in the newsroom and they're also your main editors, I mean, they're also your main cameramen, it is tough to do everything, but we do need your help. All right, let's jump to yet another call. Let's go to Carlisle in Texas. Carlisle, you're on the line with Ray McGovern and myself.
Hey, I actually have something to plug. It's kind of off the subject from what you guys have been talking about.
Okay.
But it has to do with how Chief Acevedo wants to use the federal grants to forcibly, you know, take people's blood that refuse breathalyzers.
Okay.
And I know Alex Jones had Chief Acevedo, you know, on on about that, and he was saying how he wants to have a dialogue and engage the public, but, you know, we've been trying to contact him for the last 4 months. So what we were going to do was on Halloween night at 9 o'clock on 4th and Lavaca, we're going to stage a protest to try and, you know, get his air and get him to actually come down here and explain how that program is supposed to prevent drunk driving, but it doesn't prevent it at all.
Okay, so what time is that going to take place?
It's going to be at 9 o'clock on Friday on Halloween night.
Okay, all right, man. You got it. Thanks for the plug. All right, let's jump to Andy in North Carolina. Andy, what's on your mind?
Mr. McGovern, how are you, sir?
Hi, Andy.
Hey, Jason, how are you, buddy?
Good, man.
Hey, listen, Mr. McGovern, I was going to ask you and correct me
Ryan
if I'm wrong.
In Kentucky?
You mentioned that you were slightly dismayed by the fact that Hillary didn't get the nomination?
Not dismayed, just really, 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 really happy that someone who did something crass for political purpose, and as a result, 4,200 U.S. servicemen are killed, that it turned out to be just the opposite of what she expected. The war turned sour, and the person who was against the war from the beginning won the nomination. That should be an object lesson to all people who make important decisions based on their ambitions to be president or whatever.
Well, I certainly agree that, you know, to see Hillary go down is a good thing, and that is a victory if that's the case. My thing is a little bit larger point. I was left dumbfounded because I guess I'd become intellectually lazy that, you know, Hillary was going to be given the nomination and we would just continue as we had, because I figured if Bush was going to create this police state, if he's going to leave it, he's going to leave it to someone that's going to continue on that thing. And I think while we were all sleeping, and maybe you could speak to this or maybe you disagree, that this thing that Tarpley talked about, I used to think he was a windbag, really, but I got to listening to him. This whole Obama thing and the fascism thing, he's on to it. And I think that maybe we've slept walked through this, and we're going to get a dictator that everybody loves.
Rick and Reno?
Which is way more scary than one that's, you know, that's hated.
Well, let me say this. I'm definitely fearful of that. I think Tarpley has somewhat of an ultra perspective on, you know, Obama bringing, you know, super fascism to the United States. I don't see that. But I do, unfortunately, I mean, I differ from Mr. McGovern, and I do see him bringing in more globalization. I did not like his speech in Berlin again. I mean, a 1.5 million youth brigade talking about global citizenship. He seems to be on the wrong side of the coin on the carbon tax debate, and I think a lot of people are going to love him. Like I said, I disagree with Tarpley, where he says that Obama isn't that well-spoken and he stutters and stammers. I don't see that much at all, and I watch him in extended periods of time. I see him as a confident man who can look you in the eye. He can orate well, and he is good with his hands and his head motion. I mean, he's very good at answering questions and seeming credible and smart. So, you know, I don't see that. Do you want to speak to that, Mr. McGovern? What do you think? I mean, obviously you're in support of him.
Well, you know, it's a compared to what sort of thing. And you're quite right. We're going to have to wait and see. But I'm less concerned about the global aspects that seem to trouble so many people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if adopting a global perspective means going back and realizing that the new guidelines for war, for example, was set up after World War II and resulted in the Charter of the United Nations, which prohibits any country from conducting a preventive attack or a, quote, preemptive, end quote, attack of the kind that Bush and Cheney have done. You're not allowed to attack another country unless there's an imminent threat to your country, and nobody argues there was an imminent threat. This crew thought they could change not only international law as contained in the UN Charter, but national law, because, as you know, once the Senate approves such a charter, and it did something like 95-2, once the Senate approves it, it becomes the law of the land. And so a war of aggression is just not a really good thing to do. And to the degree Obama is focusing in on this kind of thing, that we would have a modicum of respect for the law, well, hack my hats off to that kind of perspective.
All right, let's jump to Ryan in Kentucky. Ryan, what's on your mind?
I was calling about the recent news of the public health emergency for anthrax, botulism, and smallpox until 2015, and how that could possibly play in the future. And also on how the Coast Guard is actually the agency in charge of a biotech or a pandemic flu release.
Well, to be honest, I don't really know much about this this new warning. Maybe you could send that over to Aaron at Infowars.com. I mean, again, some things slip through the cracks here. We don't get everything. We try to report as much as we can on our four-hour radio show, but that is something, a point of interest we would be into. So please email that to Aaron at Infowars. All right, let's go to Rick in Reno. Rick, what's on your mind?
Is Obama going to have the coattails to end this war?
Well, I mean, I'll let Ray answer that on his perspective. Obviously, he's optimistic and hopeful that he does. I don't believe so. I mean, I see these de-escalation plans. They're already in place. They're talking about they're going to take a few thousand here and a few thousand there. But all it will take, in my mind at least, is an insurgency to keep the excuse to have these people there. I mean, Obama's been very slick with his stance on the war. He's, you know, obviously said that we have to take care of problems at home before we can take care of problems abroad. He's very well spoken, but I will leave that question to Mr. McGovern. Do you think he's going to end this war?
Well, you know, the war is over, folks. The Iraqis have invited us out. We cannot stay there legally past the 31st of December. We will stay past the 31st of December, but we will incur the opprobrium of the whole world and the Iraqis. So it's just a matter of time, and it's just a matter of setting the timetable for withdrawal. Now, if we linger on like we did in Saigon and environs there in South Vietnam, then it's going to be a case of picking up the residual American presence off the rooftops of the billion-dollar embassy we've just created there in the Green Zone, and it's going to be a horror. But it need not be so. We need to listen to the Iraqis. 70% of the Iraqis, according to U.S. Army-sponsored surveys, 70% want us out of there. Okay? So all we have to do is disavow any intention to grab more than our share of the oil, to disavow any intention to build permanent military bases, and just say, okay, you can take this for real, international community. And then and only then, you know, will the Arab League countries, India, Pakistan, the West Europeans, they'll come in behind us and help us exit as gracefully as we can. Because they like us now, they all hate us by now, but they're more interested in stability in that area than we are. And, of course, they're also interested in getting a portion of the oil. So it's over. It's just a matter of whether we linger for two, three, four more years and take the kinds of casualties that we've had since the surge, or whether we, in a more enlightened way, say, okay, Maliki, we understand the pressures you're under. We're not going to press to stay any longer than you want us, and just help us exit in as graceful a way as is possible. That's the answer. And for those who, you know, think that we have to stay there to referee a civil war between the Sunni and Shia, I mean, that just doesn't pass for me. I don't want one American young man or woman to perish because we're refereeing a civil war, and that's pretty much what it comes down to right now.
I'm with you there. Ray, you know, you just talked about the oil, and I was just wondering your opinion on whether or not, you know, this current economic crisis is going to continue to drop the price of oil by the barrel, and, you know, how is this going to affect the oil industry? Do you think that they're just going to subside on their massive profits they've taken in the last 4 years for a little while? Do you think they're doing this, you know, to maybe make the economic crisis a little less worse? What's your take on that?
Well, you know, the price of oil fluctuates depending on how big a threat there seems to be in the Persian Gulf. And I think the oil companies are seeing what I reported earlier, that there's less likely to be a wider war there and that the U.S. will have to depart. Now, the problem remains because, you know, as I've said to countless audiences, one of the most important factoids in the international situation is that the world is running out of oil. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so in a very real sense, you can look at the attack on Iraq.
All right, Ray, I do have to let you go. We're about to go to break. I thank you so much. I love having you on. Hopefully you'll join us soon. Folks, it's the final segment 1 week before the presidential election, and this show brings you every perspective. I mean, truly, folks, I mean, we had Webster Tarpley on for 90 minutes today, if you missed it, and he was wildly against Obama. We just had Ray McGovern on for the last 60, and he's trying to promote you to vote for Barack Obama. Of course, I myself am trying to get you to vote third party and vote your heart, much like Jesse Ventura. And all those perspectives today were covered. And we had Willie Nelson on his famous tour bus. Exclusive stuff, not even on the web yet, not even over at Infowars.com yet. You can look for that to be posted later on this evening. Remember, all this rebroadcasts in a matter of 6 minutes over at Infowars.com for free. The way you support us is you become a PrisonPlanet.tv member, and you burn all of our movies, all of our documentaries, all of our information to disk, you hand it out, and you spread the word. All right, in the last few minutes, I'm just going to run through some calls here. Let's go to Donnie in the UK. What's up, Donnie?
Hello.
Yes, what's on your mind, sir?
Hi, Jason. I'd just like to say I'm really pleased that I get through. I've been trying to get through the show for a couple of months now. Mm-hmm. What led me to you guys was a video called No End in Sight about the Iraq War.
Okay.
Which I was pretty disgusted with.
Mm-hmm.
So that led me on to you guys, and now everywhere I look, I can see things like that Alec is talking about, he's been speaking about for months, and I'm trying to tell people, and it's so hard.
Well, what other videos do you have out there? Those are the tools, man. I mean, it's one thing to step up to somebody and talk to them. You know, you can get a light to start to switch on. But when you hand them an info bomb like the movie that, you know, No End in Sight, that brought you out, maybe you should be making copies of that, or Iraq for Sale, or my films, Loose Change, Final Cut, Fabled Enemies, Alex's films, Endgames. First, you have to educate yourself and get the information. Then I always tell people the next level is to set up a little burner, something that you can copy this information to, and then, you know, get a point of interest with somebody. In other words, an agreement point, somewhere where you can relate to them, and then hand off the DVD. That's how you're going to reach the masses. Continue, Donnie.
Yeah. I did notice a couple of weeks ago in Glasgow, where I live, a private car with a kind of rig on the roof, like a roof rack type thing, but there was this big object sticking up from it, and it really resembled the machines they used in New York, the sound detectors. Is that
right? Yeah. Well, what those are, and I thank you for the call because I got a couple other ones. Those aren't sound detectors. Those are sound wave weapons, and they're using those not only in domestic cases with the National Guard, like they did at the DNC and the RNC in 2004, but they're now using it for military applications. And when they point it at you and fire, it literally feels like your whole body is aflame. And you just want to move the quickest possible. There's different levels, different frequencies. You know, it can go further. It can be lighter. It's literally like a ray gun. It's pretty crazy. Let's jump to Mark in Georgia. Mark, what's on your mind? You with me, Mark? Okay, maybe we drop Mark. Let's go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir. What's up?
There we go. Hallelujah. I forgot. Never mind. quickly. The status of forces agreement is dead in the water. According to what I've read, the Iraqi representatives know that it's political poison, and with this not being ratified, it's like basically we can't stay there without this agreement, without our forces being subject to their law. In other words, you know, you rape or murder somebody, we lock you up and we...
Yeah, but that
on
seems
trial.
To me like it's going to be political rhetoric. I don't think there's going to be any nuts behind that at all. Just like Ray McGovern says, we're not leaving at the end of January. You know what I'm saying? And they're not going to start convicting or prosecuting members of Blackwater or our military. I am not as optimistic as Mr. McGovern. I don't see this change coming with Obama. I don't see the dark future that Tarpley has, but definitely leaning towards that way. I am Jason Burmis. I subbed in for Alex Jones today. Infowars.com for the refeed right now. Be any nuts behind that at all, just like Ray McGovern says, we're not leaving at the end of January. You know what I'm saying? And they're not going to start convicting or prosecuting members of Blackwater or our military. I am not as optimistic as Mr. McGovern. I don't see this change coming with Obama. I don't see the dark future that Tarpley has, but definitely leaning towards that way. I am Jason Burmis. I subbed in for Alex Jones today. Infowars.com for the refeed right now.